Good morning, everyone. If you are joining us in chambers this morning, my name is David Richardson, and you are at the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee, and I'm joined by Commissioner Iola and Vice Chairman Fernandez, I understand, is joining us in a moment. So with that, I'd like to ask Rafael to let people know how they can join us electronically.
Good morning, everyone. So in order to participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462 pound. Or you could log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if you're using the Zoom app or dial *9 if you're participating by phone.
Thank you very much. Kathy, thanks. Good to see you again. I want to go through the items that have been deferred. I know they've been annotated for the most part on the agenda, but if you could walk us through that, I would appreciate that.
Absolutely, Commissioner. So number 2 was reflected as deferred on the original agenda. Subsequent to that, and it's printed on the agenda currently, but for clarification, item 13 regarding cost allocation, item 20 regarding email cybersecurity, and item number 10 regarding GFCBB have all been deferred. In addition, item number 19 was reflected as withdrawn on the additional agenda. So the items that will not be heard today that are listed on the agenda are 2, 10, 13, 19, and 20.
Thank you. And
a couple of also just clarifications. There was a correction to the agenda as well to reflect that items number 8 and 23 should have had the box for GOB checked. So we corrected that. And we discussed with your office that item number 23 would be a 10:30 time certain.
And there's another item that had, I think, an 11 or 11:30. I'll have to check with Lewis on that. In addition to these items, item number 1 on the IG is being deferred. We have a meeting that was originally scheduled on the 7th. That has now, we're going to have to reschedule that because of some schedule conflicts. So we will hear this item after that meeting, the committee meeting. So I apologize if we have brought you here unnecessarily, but that was a late decision. So thank you so much, and we'll be talking to you soon. Thanks very much.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. You're recognized.
I would like to defer item number 5.
Number 5. Perfect. In addition, anything else? Because I'm welcoming any and all deferrals, given an item agenda with 27 items. Commissioner Ariolo, anything?
Nothing at this time. I don't have that many on here.
Yeah, that's perfect. Okay, great. Good. Okay, with that, we've got some that are going to be relatively quick. Let's do the waste hauler, item number 3, and item number 4. These items are going to be heard in at the next meeting because staff needs some additional time. But I asked them to give us a very, very brief, no more than 5-minute status report on where they're at. Mr. Gomez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Commissioners, Mr. City Attorney, and Ms. CFO. Two items, item 3 and item 4. The first one, I'll tackle the first one first, which is the establishing a maximum fee cap for multifamily dwellings of less than 25 units. Based on our analysis and in consultation with the city attorney's office, in order to be able to raise that cap to 24, in other words, include from 9 to 24 in pricing, it would require an amendment to Section 90-97 of the city code. Because right now the city code, the wording reads residents, single-family residents and multifamily residents of 8 units or less. So that wording would have to be rephrased to 24 so that we can do that. Now, in order to be able to accomplish that, there's a couple of options to do that. One would be to issue a separate RFP because it would have to be based on pricing, since we're trying to establish the maximum pricing, a separate RFP for the 9 to 24. The second option would be to do a bid waiver on the current exclusive residential contract and adding that element, the 9 to 24 range within that. That would require a bid waiver. And, Rafael, I'm not going to speak on your behalf, but I believe you, based on the opinion that you provided to us, it would probably require a 5-7 vote of the full commission to do a bid waiver if the commission chose to do that.
That's right. So if you're going to move, if you're going to amend the scope of the single-family waste residential contract to permit them to service accounts for multifamily dwellings less than 25 units, then we need a code amendment, and then in order you could either do a new competitive solicitation or a bid waiver would be required because it is otherwise an exclusive contract.
And Mr. Chair, just
you recognize.
And just to make sure you understand, that is so that residential buildings get a residential rate and not a commercial rate.
That's right.
That would, be increasing the cap from 8 units, which is currently the cutoff, to 24.
That's correct. But they're residents of the city nonetheless.
Yes, sir.
So right now, what are we doing with units, with apartments there? I guess buildings with less than 8 units, they're treated as
residential? They're treated as residential, yes, sir.
And that's?
That's under the exclusive
contract.
That's
in our ordinance?
Yes, sir.
That's right.
That is it.
Okay. All right. Well, how about we do this? Commissioner Fernandez, why don't you work with staff before the next meeting so we can flesh this out a little bit more?
For sure.
The other thing I'd like to do is when you come back at the next meeting, I would like a full presentation on the franchise fee situation because I don't really understand why the single family homes, we don't have a franchise fee, but then we have a franchise fee for the commercial buildings, and it's my understanding it's like 24%.
22%.
22%.
Yes.
So in my view, it's a tax. Obviously, it gets passed. You know, they don't absorb it. It gets passed back to the user, and I don't understand the history of why some people in this community are paying this tax and others are not. So I just want a more history on it, and if you'll be prepared to talk about that. And with that, we're going to close the item, and we'll hear it again, Kathy, at the next meeting, the 17th. Go ahead.
And just for clarification, so that I have good feedback from the body on what to work with Mr. Gomez, what I understand is an ordinance for that to apply that residential rate to buildings with up to 25 units, and we want to extend that to those residential buildings as well. Is that the will of the body?
I am not there yet.
Okay.
So because then it begs the question, I don't know how the 8 got established instead of 9, right? And then I don't know if it's 24, why is it not 25? So I'm not there yet.
Okay, got it.
Okay?
All right.
But I'm certainly willing to hear
to
more
explore,
and see.
Right.
Maybe the number is 25 or 26 or 20, I don't know.
I understand.
But I think what I would recommend, meet with staff so that, you know, they know what you're thinking and what, you know, you'd like them to explore, and then we're going to get closer to having an answer. Because the goal is to get something out of this committee to send back so that we can move forward with a new contract.
Yes, sir.
I think the one thing that has been decided, it seems like there is pretty much consensus that, you know, we had this early question of whether or not we would have one provider or multi, and I think it's been pretty clear, not just from this body, but from the other commissioners, that there is a will to have multiple providers, whether that's 3, 4, I think the code the
5.
Is
it allows
5.
Up to 5.
Maximum.
Yes, sir.
So, okay, good.
As promised, 5 minutes or less.
Thank you. You did a great job. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Great. That takes care of everything on the first page. How about that? Let's take item 8 on the Byron Carlisle. Mr. Morales, whoever is going to do this, this is going to be very quick, 5 minutes. I want to get you all out and get you back to work if I can. We've got a lot going on this. I know at the last meeting we were, I think it was your suggestion that we start looking at a potential cultural partner and maybe letters. So just if 5 minutes, Mr. Morales, did that letter, I guess, request for letters of interest go out? Or
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members, Adrian Morales, Facilities Director, for the record. Yes, the request for letters of interest went out earlier this week. We expect those responses back on February 8th. This item for the Byron Carlisle, you know, as we're all aware, the arts and culture geo bond that was passed by the voters does include an allocation of $30 million for the reconstruction of the Byron Carlisle. And our intent is, as we move forward with that geo bond process, to find a cultural partner to manage and operate the facility and work in conjunction with the city to develop this property.
Okay, great. And so you're expecting responses
February 8th. So this need for us to find the cultural partner has been reviewed by the Cultural Arts Council. We worked with Michael Spring at the county, who is, you know, obviously the czar on culture. We've worked on, you know, with all of the, you know, entities, tourism, you know, all of our departments internally to be able to produce this document, and we're hoping to get responses back. You know, so anybody that has done Culture Miami Beach and a wide range of respondents, we're send out this RFLI, and hopefully we get some good interest and we can sit with them and review and bring this back to the commission for your review and approval.
Yeah, we're not obviously going to be making a final decision on this. It's a really big decision, but we're just looking at and who might be interested. Commissioner Arreola, you're recognized.
Yeah, an idea. You know, we have a substantial amount of money to do something really nice, you know, whether we go it alone or we partner. But along the lines of, I think, what you're proposing, Commissioner Richardson, I would like to see us, you know, in the next couple of months for sure to get, you know, some really good ideas on what to do with the space. And reaching out to cultural partners is a way to go. My observation, having worked in the arts community for, you know, 20 years now, you know, many of these art organizations come and go. You know, they're small and they don't last as soon as the founder, you know, moves on. So there's that aspect. Some of them are self-serving. You know, if you talk to a comedy improv store, they're going to want you to build, you know, something to support comedy improv. If you talk to a theater group, they want theater. If you want, you know, a movie house, they're going to want a movie house. You know, whether we hire, you know, an art consultant to tell us, you know, what does a, you know, a local regional theater or, you know, community-based arts building typically contain, whether it's art gallery space plus performance space plus a, you know, a screening room, I'd like to get, you know, a best practice so that we have a vision for what the local community will support, right? Because we want this to be something that serves local Miami Beach residents, first and foremost, be a catalyst for North Beach, and support our local arts organizations, right? I don't know what that will look like. It can look like everything I just said, an art gallery, performance space, a screening room, and some office space to house arts organizations, but we do need a vision there, whether it's coming from Mr. Spring at the county or we just hire an art consultant for not a lot of money to give us a best practice. You know, what is, you know, what does a city like Nashville have? What does a city like Austin have? You know, and then we can say, okay, for our $30 million, we know what we can build. If we want to do more, we might have to partner with a third party. I'd like to see us get that vision done sooner rather than later, because that $30 million decreases in value the longer we wait, you know, and then we won't have enough money. So the sooner we can get that money spent, the more value we're going to get for it.
I agree. So I've been very public about my belief that, you know, we should have a mixed-use facility with some workforce housing. So Servitas, you know, I started talking to Servitas a year and a half ago, and I've mentioned this publicly before. I'm not supporting that as the loan option, the sole option, but we have a lot more flexibility now because we have more money. So originally. So they're planning on submitting an unsolicited proposal, but they want to close out the one in Collins Park. The really great news is we just got an LTC that it looks like we're going to be very close to closing out the Collins Park. And, you know, we supported putting a little bit more money on the table so that we can make the financing work. So the great news is that with the Byron Carlisle, given that we have $30 million, their model that they had been working on would have only required $5 to $10 million. But now we have $30, so maybe we don't need as much workforce housing. We can have some of these office and artist spaces, you know, and or pay down some of the rent so we can provide really some attractive rental rates for artists. So I'm hoping as soon as that Collins Park is closed out, Servitas will at least share with us their thoughts and ideas, because I, too, would like to move on this sooner rather than later. So, Adrian.
Through the chair, if I may.
Please.
For Commissioner Arriola, we had Alan Shulman prepare a conceptual master plan over the summer. We had community meetings, we had charrettes, we had community surveys. All of those details are being finalized so that we can present that before the full commission on Wednesday. And that is part of, so this is all good feedback for us. Once we get those, you know, requests for letters of interest and all the, those come in, it can start that process of us trying to get organized and get ready to work with whatever, you know, entities are available and also these consultants to build this. The last thing we want is to build an asset to have somebody else manage. We want to do it in conjunction. That is probably the best, you know, opportunity for us to maximize that asset. So that is what we're working on, and you'll see more through the geobond process. You'll see more, you know, as we develop this over the next few weeks into the next few months.
Commissioner.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just a question about process. So in December, the City Commission as a body gave direction to the administration to seek expressions of interest from cultural institutions to occupy or to activate the Byron Carlisle. Now, just for purposes of the record, I just want to make sure and get clarification on this from our staff. This is not binding. This is simply to solicit ideas on how, from the industry, from the cultural industry and organizations, on how to best occupy this building and this space. And then after that, we'll do an RFP. But through this RFLI process, we're not committing or tying our hands to any one entity. Is that correct, Mr. Attorney?
That's exactly right, Commissioner.
Okay, perfect. I just wanted that clarification.
The only thing that will be helpful is if somebody comes up with something that could affect the structure of the building. Let me give you an example. Had we known with the Collins Park garage that someday it would be a black box theater, then we probably would have built the second level with a higher ceiling, or we would have prepared for something to go down, and we can still go down inside the building to make it a little bit more height. But the biggest question, a build-out is not going to happen until the very end of construction. The bigger question will be, do we want parking or not parking in whatever building we do? Because if we don't have parking, we have about 19,500 square feet on the ground floor. If we want parking, the ramp reduces that to about 14,000 square feet. So that will affect what we have on the ground floor. And so the question is, you know, that will be an important question in terms of what the space looks like, the shell looks like. So thank you very much. We're going to, Kathy, let's keep this item open, and then let's see where we are, and then maybe we'll be ready to bring it back in March.
Bring back in March? Okay.
Okay. Transportation, number nine is going to be really quick. That's a short report, so somebody's going to tell us about, this is the drop-off lane we've been working on for a while. It is my... go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director. Just real brief, by way of background, as most of you are aware, we the city had developed a concept for a pickup and drop-off lane in front of Miami Beach Senior High, adjacent to the existing bus loop lane there. That concept was shared with the Miami-Dade County Public Schools as well as with the county. At that time, those two entities expressed concerns with our idea of creating a new drop-off lane there. They had some safety concerns, if you will, and as a result, the Miami-Dade County Public Schools felt that installing a fence in front of the school would be a more advantageous deterrent to kids jaywalking across Dade Boulevard. They have gone ahead and installed that fence already, so it is there. However, we kept on pushing for a long-term, more permanent solution, something more meaningful. I'm happy to report that as a result of the QEC's advocacy and this committee's attention to that, to this issue, it has been revived. Our concept of the pickup drop-off lane has been revived, and Miami-Dade County Public Schools has committed to work with us to try to address their concerns through the design development process. And so that is where we are. We're engaging a designer to move forward with the concept, because what was presented in the past and put on hold was just a concept. It was just an idea, a sketch, if you will. That obviously needs to be designed, because these would entail infrastructure improvements, possibly drainage, lighting, and that sort of thing. Even though it's a simple project, it's a one lane, but it's infrastructure nevertheless, and there may be utilities there, so it needs to be designed.
Jose, would we be since that's a county word, would we be working with the county for, you know, funding that?
So interestingly enough, that's how this item came to this committee. It was to identify funding for it. At that time, the concept was estimated at about $500,000 or $600,000 thereabouts. And the committee's idea was to break that up into a third Miami-Dade County Public Schools, a third Miami-Dade County Transportation and Public Works, and a third for City of Miami Beach. And so that was presented, that approach was presented. However, the issue was not one of funding, if you will. It was more of just concerns with the concept itself that we're trying to work through.
Thank you.
So what's the next step? You're working with the county?
We're working with the county, but Commissioner, we need to design the pickup and drop-off lane through engineering, you know, drawings, and we'll be working with the county as part of that and asking that they, you know, expedite the review, but that is on us. We are taking the lead on this, and so we're engaging one of our
designers. So do we have a design firm that's working on that, or you're working with somebody?
We're working with them to engage them, yes.
All right, when do we think the design would be ready? Is that 30 days, 90 days? What do you think?
Commissioner, I really don't know. I think we need a schedule from the designer. We don't have a schedule yet. Once he's officially engaged, one of the first things we'll ask for is a schedule, a timeline for that design.
Are we using a firm that we already have a contract with?
Yes, sir. We're using one of our rotationals.
Okay, so February 17th, I'd like you to come back and tell us what the timeline is, and also if we can get a rough order of magnitude, if we still think this is $500,000 or $600,000, and also if we are planning to split the cost three ways, if that's still the plan. If not, we need to know that, because I'm going to need to start looking for money so that we can fund it. Commissioner, go ahead. You're recognized.
Yes, and one of the things that I just would like us, and Commissioner Richardson, I want to thank you for leading on this item. If you agree, setting a goal for the deadline of this, because from my perspective, this is something, especially when school is out of session for summer break, it would be great if somehow we can cut the red tape of bureaucracy and you know, have that design completed, because it's not a big project, have permits in hand so that while school is out, this project can be built and constructed, so that the kids have to save for pickup lane by the time August rolls around. And I would like to put that out there. The other thing, Mr. Chair, with your permission, that I would like our staff to look at is whether there's any county funding for transportation safety projects that may have been allocated to the city in the past
that has not been used, that may be sitting in some pocket that has not been used, that perhaps with county permission could be reallocated for something as essential as the safety of our students at Miami Beach Senior High. So I would like to offer those two suggestions.
Yeah, I think, I don't know how long it's going to take to do the design, but whatever we can do to move it along, which is why I want you to come back at February 17th and tell us what the design firm tells us, that if they are going to need 90 days, 30 days, or whatever, because I would like to move this along as soon as possible. And I think it's a great suggestion to see if there's any grant money out there. I don't know. This is a county road, right?
State yeah. Boulevard.
And what about, and we should also check with the school board and see what funding they may have as well. Because if we're going to need to come up with $500,000, then we need to start looking for it. Okay, we'll see you back on February 17th. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fernandez, let's hear your item 12 on licensing of boat operators. That should be a relatively quick item. Let's hear. So item 12, licensing of boat operators. I'm trying to get some of these smaller ones out of the way. You're recognized. Are you want to tee this up?
We can let staff.
Good morning. Manny Marcus, Assistant Finance Director. Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, committee members. We've done a lot of good work here at FERC. This is the fourth time this item has been here. And coincidentally, we're also working at the Public Safety Neighborhoods Committee on the licensing, not only of charter boats, but licensing in general. Previously, if a boat operator was issued a violation for not having a BTR, they would be issued a violation for $1,000. Any subsequent violation would be for $500. At next week's commission meeting, we're bringing in an ordinance to change that. Mr. Vice Chair Fernandez, you were instrumental in working with us on that. So we're going to have a scaled approach where each violation is higher than the previous one, and operators are going to get suspended and suspended for a long time. So that's coming next week, next Wednesday. On marina specific, we've worked with co-compliance. We've worked with facilities and curtailing the applicants. We had a stretch of 3 to 4 years where we had more and more boat operators. Ever since COVID, there are more applicants. And now it seems to have plateaued, and we have restrictions at the marina. If a boat operator, they need to have a landing slip. They need to have somewhere to dock their boat in order to pick up passengers. And the marina's at full capacity, so they're not accepting any new BTR applicants until there's a vacant boat slip. So that's killing that industry there. Code is issued. Many, many violations during the last couple of years. And we've also streamlined and also made the application process a lot tighter. And in addition to going to the Marine Board, which as an advisory review, facilities reviews applications, finance reviews applications, planning reviews applications, and we review applications. So I think we've made a big dent. We're also meeting with the City of Miami on a quarterly basis to go over joint issues, particularly in the water, but also anything emerging industries. Like, this is a side note, but for example, CBD products. So we're meeting with them, and they're very good meetings, and we're going to continue doing that. One quarter we go there, one quarter they come here. So we're making progress. I think this particular industry, we have a good handle on it. Now what's happening on the water is a different story. I think that's, there's something going in neighborhoods on the activities that are actually happening on the water. But as far as the licensing goes, I think we have a really good handle on it.
And I would say, just to add to that, Manny, that you didn't mention, but it's in the memo, you know, we've seen a significant decrease this fiscal year in the number of violations issued as a result. So, for example, in the first quarter last year, we issued 42, and this year we've only issued one because we have really tightened up on that from the PTR's perspective.
Yeah, we deny a lot more applications than are issued now, for sure.
Go ahead, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to put for the record that during the time frame of 2021 through January 10, 2023, Code Compliance has issued 580 violations at the Miami Beach Marina. It's no wonder that our residents are contacting us complaining about noise and the activity happening there. Staff, for my edification, perhaps the city attorney, what jurisdiction and role does the Department of Regulatory Environmental Resources at the county have in the review of these BTR applications?
There is a DERM review. There is a DERM review of commercial activities at the marina for commercial slips. And my understanding,
Mr. Attorney, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Sometimes it's hard for me to hear. So, people, if you're speaking in the audience, it's hard to sometimes follow if people are speaking in the audience. We're in small chambers, so I'm sorry. Yes, please continue.
Yes, Commissioner. So, my understanding is that DERM reviews commercial slips and applications for commercial slips. And so, at the marina, they have approved up to 100 commercial slips at the marina. The review is...
Excuse me. If you all want to have a conversation, please take it outside, okay? Because it's disrupting the conduct of the business here. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
My understanding is that the DERM review is really limited to manatee protection requirements, and that's why they've currently approved up to 100, but if there was an application for a greater amount, our understanding is that DERM would likely review that. But there is a DERM review that is a part of commercial slip at the marina or in any other marina.
I think a lot of our issues... Sorry.
If I may, and just to follow up on that, because my concern is that, for example, marina like the Miami Beach Marina having such a high number of notice of violations, but they're also in a residential part of our city, directly abutting where you have thousands of Miami Beach residents trying to maintain their quality of life, enjoying the peace of where they live, and especially at night. We don't want people, you know, engaging in activity that disrupts their quality of life. So the same way that RER has approved up to 100 of these BTRs at the marina, do they have the ability to set a lower cap? Because let's say, what if we would like for the marina to have more of a residential, that the preference be that it be residents using that marina, is it possible for them to set a lower cap on the number of commercial BTRs?
To clarify, they don't approve BTRs; they approve slips at the marina, and they have approved based on what we understand are manatee protection requirements. They've approved right now up to 100. Whether DERM could lower that threshold, I don't know that what you're referring to. It's a very real issue in terms of the residential area and the notice of violations. But their review is environmental in nature, not based on these other issues that you're raising.
Okay.
Just so I'm clear, Commissioner Fernandez, is it your view or your liking to try to push more, you know, residential use of the marina versus commercial?
100%.
Yeah, so I had that exact same desire and vision. I used to park my boat there. Now you can't even get in there, and it's completely become overrun with commercial use. I think that's inconsistent with what, you know, we should be using that marina or any other marina. You know, I've said it before. I think it's a shame that, you know, Miami Beach hadn't, you know, planned better so that we had more marinas on our bayside. Because even though we're surrounded by water, to live here, it's really hard to, you know, have a boat here and go out and use it. Marinas are incredibly expensive, and you just can't get a slip. And as we try to activate, you know, our Baywalk again, you know, there are some marinas back there. There's potential down the road if we ever wanted to expand those marinas. But to see them just to go for commercial use would be a total waste and compatible with a resident use of our waterways. So, you know, I won't be here, but, you know, I'd like to see a future commission expand the marinas on the bayside, but it should be for exclusive use of residents.
And we were also in discussions with the manager's office and Adrian Morales and his team with Suntex to address the mix of slips at the marina, and we'll hope to report back to the neighborhoods committee. This item is a standing item at neighborhoods, and it's going to be heard at the February meeting.
Is there anything in the contract that speaks to the mix between commercial and residential that we have with them?
Not directly related to the mix, but that's what we're trying to establish.
Got it. And Mr. Chair, if I guess if there's a takeaway here, you know, please, if it could be heard by Suntec and by everyone else out there, that the preference should be, it's a taxpayer's marina. It's the public's marina. Our residents and the residents and taxpayers of the city of Miami Beach should have the preference in the use and the lease of the slips in that marina. We have limited waterfront homes in this city, but we are a dense city. We're a vertical city as well. And the individuals who live in our condos may want to use those marinas as well. So the preference should be residential use. Now, if you can't fill it with residential use and then you have vacant spaces, well, then at that point, you know, you can go out commercial, but the taxpayer's property should be for the residents that live in the city of Miami Beach. And if that can be the takeaway, it'd be fantastic.
So what do you want to do with this? Can we conclude? You want to continue it until what, March?
Yeah, I would like to keep the item in the committee, continue it to March. Thank you for the good work. Please continue aggressively protecting the quality of life of the residents that live around these marinas, because it's a big issue that I hear about every single day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kathy, let's mark this one down to put it back for March.
Yes,
okay?
I have that.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's call item 26. I understand some folks may have some travel plans. So this is your item, Commissioner Fernandez, with Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez. So do you want to tee it up, or do you want staff to tell us where we are? Okay.
It's a procurement item.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Happy to have staff.
Good morning. So this item is in response to the city manager's recommendation to reject the Alchemy proposal at the November commission meeting. The commission referred the item to discussion to this committee, and your packages include the city manager's prior two recommendations and the latest proposal from Alchemy.
Why don't you just give us a little bit more background, how the procurement, the nature of the procurement, how many responses we got, what the evaluation team came up with, and how the administration reached their conclusion. I think this was the item that was on consent and was pulled.
We pulled
and
referred for more information for it. Talk to us a little bit about the procurement process. What are the differences that the selection committees saw between these companies and the recommendation?
So let me go back to the beginning. If you recall, we had a prior contract with Alchemy for some garage advertising. That contract was terminated, and the commission directed us to issue a new RFP. The RFP was issued, and we only received one proposal from Alchemy. So there was no comparison of other proposals. And frankly, that's part of the manager's concern, that we only received one proposal for something that should have drawn a lot more attention. In April, the manager made a recommendation to reject the proposal because the revenue was very low. The prior agreement had $250,000 annual revenue, and the first proposal pursuant to the RFP was $36,000, or there were two options, $36,000 or $54,000, depending on the type of signage, digital or not digital, those things. The manager recommended rejection. The commission said, why don't you try and negotiate? So we tried to negotiate. In November, Alchemy came back with a revised proposal of $100,000 or $36,000, depending on the type of signage again, and also window cleaning vinyl, floor to ceiling. For example, along Meridian here, there's a proposal to include 90 feet of floor-to-ceiling advertising. The manager was uncomfortable with that amount of advertising and such low revenue, $36,000 or $100,000. So that was the August recommendation. the November recommendation to reject, and at the November November recommendation was deferred to this committee. So subsequent to the city manager's second recommendation to reject, Alchemy submitted another revised proposal, option three, that is better in revenue, but still it's $160,000 annually in revenue, but still includes that massive amount of advertising and the window clings, which are a concern, you know, not only along Meridian, but also at the New World Center parking garage, that first floor that's leased out to the Learned That Lab. There's some advertising going there, but that's a leased space, so we can't put window cling on somebody's leased space. So the manager's concern and the administration's concern really is there's a whole lot of advertising for not a lot of money, and we believe we can maybe structure this in a different way, reject this proposal, and go back out with another RFP that is really more specific to what the city is looking for.
Through the chair.
Go ahead. You're recognized.
But to that point, Mr. Dennis, could the city not award the RFP and begin to receive financial benefits from this contract? Because ultimately we do this to receive financial benefits to, like, for example, I think, the public schools. We're benefiting from this contract. Could we not award the contract, begin to receive benefits, while simultaneously, evaluating the issuance of another RFP?
You're recognized.
So we would award the contract but issue another RFP? Can you clarify that a little bit? We're going to award the contract and let them install the signage, but we're going to issue a subsequent RFP?
Yeah, well, I mean, the process of issuing an RFP, I mean, this has been going on now for a while. We can begin to receive revenues from this contract, and we can, look at what other companies are out there that could, give us better returns. But I think we lose the opportunity. In the meantime, we have space there that we could be generating revenues from that we're not right now. And if the administration is not satisfied with this, why not award the RFP while we look for another company that could give us better returns? I mean, I don't know if procedurally it makes sense, but to me,
There's a way to do it. So let me ask, what is it? You said something. There was something about a large vinyl thing that you didn't think would be aesthetically pleasing. Is that the only item in the response that you didn't think would be sightly for the city?
There is that. There's also some exterior signage that there are some concerns about. Anything else, Matt?
Yeah, so there was Matt Kenny, Assistant Director of Marketing Communications. There was the overall plan. We were concerned that we got one bid. We have been contacted by one company in specific, and it was included in one of the original agenda items with Oakview Group, who is our sponsorship agency, who's within their contract stipulates, I can read verbatim, on multiple pages within their contract, that parking garages, should they become available, would be made available to them to sell. Page 419 of their contract specifically states parking garages can be seen as another facility in the city's inventory with signage, naming rights, promotional, and advertising opportunities. So that's included within Oakview Group's contract. They have come back saying that while they might not want to sell advertising because they're concerned with the quality of the advertising that would be shown, there could be potential for them to look at sponsorships of some of our facilities. For instance, a parking garage bringing a car company in and taking over an entire floor to promote a car rather than just having like a poster hanging on the wall.
Yeah, that's another whole story. Why didn't they submit a bid if they think that they have the option to do this?
Because it was their belief within their contract already that it was their right in their contract that states that when the Alchemy contract expires that it would be within their purview.
So did they send a letter saying, why are you sending out an RFP that we have the right to do this?
They didn't send a letter. No, we had verbally discussed with them when the original rejection letter had gone out. One of the discussion items was from Oakview Group coming back saying, we believe this is within our purview to sell. Now, I know there was some discrepancy from Alchemy and their representation. I'm not a lawyer.
Has legal looked at, have you looked at that?
Like 6 months ago, so this. I would need to look at the documents. But my understanding is that Matt is correct, that the contractor for the naming rights deal does have parking garages for naming rights as part of their contract. Now, whether there's a path to reconciling what is being proposed here for advertising with naming rights, so that, you know, if the sponsorship team brings in Coca-Cola, that we're not advertising Pepsi products, then, you know, or vice versa, there may be a path to reconciling the contract and figuring that out. But Matt's correct that the sponsorship agreement, the naming agreement, does provide them with the scope to name parking garages.
But what's troubling to me is if that's true, why would the administration ever have issued an RFP to begin with?
Right.
Mr. Andrade, you're representing...
Mr. Chair, good afternoon, commissioners. Good afternoon, Ralph Andrade. I represent Alchemy, the proposer. If I could just give you a little bit more context regarding this RFP. In 2017, the city issued this procurement. We were the sole proposer. In 2000, the contract was terminated as a result of COVID, a lot of other folks' contracts were terminated during COVID because you can't perform when no one's parking in your parking garages. In 2021, the city reissued the procurement. Again, we were the sole proposer. I think this begins to suggest that this is a very niche market, and there are not a whole lot of folks who perform and you know, render these types of advertising services. And that's why you're not getting more than one proposal, because we're the leader in this space in the country, and very few folks do this. With respect to the proposals, Mr. Dennis accurately indicated the numbers. The one thing that was, I guess, inadvertently left out is that the proposals are plus. It's the MAG. For example, option three is the MAG of 160 grand, which, yes, is less than the 250 grand from the original agreement, but it's plus 15% in net revenues, which we calculate would lead to approximately 310,000 in annual revenue, or 60,000 more than the 250 that the city's, I don't want to use the word complaining, but, you know, complaining about that they're not getting. And then we also offer in-kind services to the city, which is worth about 160 grand. So the total value of this contract that what we're offering is $470,000, 220 grand more than the 250 that they received in 2017. So with respect to the financial benefits, I think this offer is heads and shoulders way above and beyond the 2017 agreement. Now, with respect to the Oakview contract that they're mentioning, I think they've all indicated it's for naming rights. His procurement isn't for naming rights. We're not looking to name your garage the Coca-Cola garage or the Ralph Andrade garage. We just want to install some advertising on dead space. You have dead space that is useless. We're not talking about space like a square footage, right? You got some blank windows. You've got some walls where we can, you know, install an advertising panel. So I happen to think that the financial return for the use of this dead space that's not going to be utilized for anything else is good. And with respect to a third RFP being issued, we agree that the city should study it. We have some ideas which we believe would attract more folks, you know, to this market. We would, of course, participate if the city does issue a third RFP. But there's no reason why, like Commissioner Fernandez said, you know, you got the bird in the hand, which is us. Take the money, run, give it to your public schools like you used to. You know, study the issuance of an RFP. We all know that process will take between issuance, award, studying, committee discussions, you know, at least a year to 2 years. Collect your revenue for that year to 2 year period. If you get a better offer, take it. Terminate us. We're willing to agree to a termination for convenience clause, as indicated in my communications. And, you know, it's a win-win for everybody. And you, bear in mind, you may not even get, if a third RFP issues, another offer. So it, to me, it doesn't, you know, you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater. You have money in your hand. Take it. How many times do I hear folks come before this body and say, hey, we need 50 grand for this, or the school needs, you know, 20,000 for that? Well, you know, here's about 300 grand cash you're going to get annually that, you know, can be put to good use.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So your client would be willing to accept a T4C, termination for convenience clause, if the contract's awarded?
Yes, and you know, obviously subject to some details, an amortization schedule, which we're happy to sit down and discuss with legal and staff. We obviously don't want to install our signage and get thrown out tomorrow morning just
what
because...
What is the minimum time that your client would be willing to accept for a T4C?
Well, we would like a one-year guaranteed non-terminable period, and then termination after that upon 120-day notice. And the reason for the 120 days is that we sell advertising in three-month cycles, so we can't, you know...
So roughly a year and a half.
16 months, yes.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
With the termination for convenience, would the city then have to pay for costs that you've incurred?
Well, we have an amortization schedule, which I can hand out.
So I think that
it's basically $4,000 a month. So assuming you terminate us in the 24th month, 12 times 4, the city would owe us $48,000. I think that keeps everyone honest, and you know, you're not just terminating us because someone woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
So you're not, when you say 16 months, that's a minimum, but there's still some amortization beyond the 16 months.
Yeah, based on a 36, if you look at this over the 36-month period,
yeah.
Our offer is basically $4,100. Excuse me, the costs come down to about $4,100 a month. So for every month that passes by, you knock off $4,100. And the base is, I think, $160,000. Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, if I may just
go ahead,
just to understand here a little bit better, so there'll be an amortization, so for their costs,
right?
But the idea would be is that if we terminate this, is because there's a better company out there that would likely be giving better returns to the city. In which case, it would make sense then in that case for the city that because there is another company out there that will be bringing more dollars, a better deal to the city, it would be worth it for the city then to terminate this contract and pay whatever it is, $40,000, $48,000, but, you know, knowing that we're going to be getting a contract that's going to be generating much more for us.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, there's no way you lose on this. That's the bottom line.
The amortization would extend through the 36 month, is that right?
Yes, which is the initial term of the contract. The RFP went out as a 3-year with a 1-1, so it would be amortized over the.
So cost. If you got terminated for convenience on halfway through at 18 months, how much would then the city be on the hook for the
18 times 4,000? You're the mathematician.
Okay.
Whatever that is, about 55 grand or so.
Okay. Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
So under this agreement, how much more are we looking at than compared to the 2017 agreement?
It's about $60,000 in
that's
hard
a complete
costs
misrepresentation.
And an additional $160,000 in kind.
Yeah, it's $160,000 guaranteed revenue plus 15% of our sales, which we calculate to be $310,000. So to the extent that guaranteed revenue, that piece is less. But overall, when you combine the two, it's more.
So, Mr. Chair,
The 310 includes the 160.
Yes, correct.
So it's 60,000 more than the prior, plus an additional 160 estimated in kind. So it's about 220,000 if you consider the in kind annually.
And the reason why I ask that is because something that's important for me is the returns that we get here, how we use those dollars. And that's really the important thing here for me is that this money helps our public schools. But I also wanted to do more than just that because, for example, the administration was recommending that we not accept this. One of the reasons why they're recommending that we not accept this is because of, you know,
the image of exterior space being polluted with this type of advertisement. Well, I'm sorry. When I walk around these garages, the worst advertisement for the city of Miami Beach are the homeless, the urination, the defecation, and the dirt and the grime that we see around some of our garages. Agreed. And so if we want to talk about that, not have a Louis Vuitton advertisement, not have a car advertisement on empty real estate. Well, I'm sorry, I much rather see the advertisement there to help fund the services that we need around some of these garages in the areas of our city that are the economic engine of our community. And our residents shouldn't be walking around streets that have grime, that have urine, that have homeless there. And if some of these dollars could be allocated in part to help with those services in these areas of our city, that we know that the areas around the garages, sometimes people feel unsafe there. That we know that sometimes during our major activation periods is where police resources have to be allocated to, and sometimes we need to spend extra money in security guard services there because people don't feel safe around our garages. And I think if we can award this contract and designate a portion of the money, you know, yes, of course, to our schools, and maybe the QEC can help determine how that money is used, but then designate a portion of it to help enhance the cleanliness and the aesthetics of those garages. Because at the end of the day, the visual ad, that's not going to make it bad. What really makes it bad is the visual of what we're seeing around some of them right now.
Okay, let me see if I can frame this because I've got... to see if I can find that for you. We want to move this back to the commission with a recommendation that we award this contract. What I want to do is frame it. So I think what I'm hearing is you want to move it back to the commission with a recommendation that we award. There be a termination for convenience clause included in the contract that exercised at the earliest at 16 months. With an amortization clause to extend through 36 months, because if we forget about the in-kind for a moment, if you get 310 through half the contract, if you have to give back $54,000, you're still making a net profit, right? And then is that my understanding? Is that's what you would like to do?
Yes, and included in there is that we continue giving part of the money for the schools. And then a portion of the money dedicated towards the cleanliness and the aesthetics around our garages.
Okay, so if that's your motion, I will second it. Commissioner Arriola, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I didn't get to speak on this, but I agree with Commissioner Fernandez on everything, including, you know, I've always been an advocate for advertisements. If they're tastefully done with a reputable company, I have no problem with it. You know, some folks, for whatever reason, are against it. But I think, you know, they can beautify what are otherwise, you know, ugly buildings. You know, garages aren't typically the, you know, the bastion of great architecture, you know, Collins Park Garage being a recent exception. And I think, you know, nice wall wraps and billboards and stuff can really beautify, educate, support the city. So, you know, I've always been an advocate for this kind of thing, so...
Okay, the only other thing is, as it moves back to the commission, I'd like you to look at this question. I do not share that they have a right to this advertising based on what was read, because if we want to name a parking garage, that's something different. I don't think that's what that says, but I'm not a lawyer, so I'd like you to look at that.
We'll work it out and make sure that if there is a sponsorship opportunity, a naming opportunity that would impact one of the garages, that we have the ability to
the naming right is totally different from putting a sign in the
that's
garage.
Right.
So that's what. Good morning, Mr. Llorente. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm well. How are you?
Good. Are you here on this item or a different
one? I was not here on this item and didn't plan to speak on it.
Okay.
But I appreciate your recognizing me for just a couple minutes. For the record, Mike Llorente, we represent LSN Partners. We represent Outfront Media. Outfront Media did not submit a proposal in response to this RFP for one key reason. This RFP was focused on garage advertising in the interior portions of the garage. At this point, what we're discussing, and frankly, they didn't participate in that because there's doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It doesn't generate a ton of revenue. But what we're talking about today is materially different because it includes vinyl wrappings on street-facing windows. And I want to read for you a sentence from the manager's recommendation dated November 16th of 2022. Among the many reasons recommending a rejection of all bids, specifically referring to these street-facing advertisements, this memo says, Alchemy has proposed, let me see here, it says that it introduces a significant number of storefront signage which, aside from not being aesthetically desirable, were not contemplated in the original scope of the RFP. And so, in addition to potentially requiring a bid waiver, I simply wanted to get on the record that if there were an advertisement opportunity with street-facing advertisement, which I think is what being is what's being discussed here, our client potentially would participate. And so I don't know. This is not something we've studied because it's not something that was included in the RFP, but I just wanted to note for the record that it is something I've confirmed with my client that we would potentially want to compete for if this RFP now includes street-facing window advertisements.
May I briefly respond?
Please.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting this from my good friend, Mr. Llorente.
Neither was I, Ralph.
But look, that said, I think your city attorney will confirm that the advertising that we've included in our media plan is compliant with your city code. It's within the interior of the garages. That's all that's required. And to the extent Outfront is interested, that's all the more reason why staff should study issuing a third RFP. And when they want to bid, if they want to bid on the third RFP, they should bid. But again, that's going to take you 18 months to 24 months. You got a bird in the hand, take the money, run. And I quadruple your motion. I think you should all vote it unanimously.
Let me just ask a couple of questions.
Yes.
The 310, which is the 160 plus 15%. Is that all internal to a garage, or is that some of the street stuff?
Well, look, it's internal. Now, let me explain. The vinyls are placed within the windows, so they're internal. They're not on the exterior of the windows. Do they face the street?
If I'm standing on the outside of the building,
you're seeing it.
I'm seeing them.
Yeah,
right?
But it's not on the exterior or external portion of the building. It's on the interior. That's why it's compliant with your city code. And again, if Outfront is interested, we welcome them. Competition is healthy. Again, that would take you, 18 to 24 months to get through the process, take the money, and run.
Was this... this particular media, was that in the original RFP or was that added later?
It's not that it wasn't or wasn't. The RFP was issued, and you had to comply with 82-71. We read the code. We read the code to understand that this type of advertising is within the property line or of the garage,
yeah,
which it is. And so that's what we proposed.
I'm just trying to, and maybe you need to look at this. I don't want to spend a lot more time on this, but I just want to make sure that this particular type of advertising fits within the scope of the RFP that was issued. And if it does not, then I think you're going to need five votes at the commission because it would be a bid waiver.
All right. And I don't think that's the case.
The
standard of the RFP was compliance with 82-71. 82-71 requires the advertising to be within the interior of the garage. There's no dispute. The fact that it's on a transparent wall doesn't change anything. It's within the interior.
Okay. Well, by the way, I don't know that we have that much transparent walling garages in the city, but that, all right, here's what we're going to do. You've got some legal things to address. You've made a motion. It's been seconded and unanimously agreed upon. We're going to send it back to the commission. You're going to get us a legal review on the question of the scope, and you're going to get us a legal review on the scope of the RFP, this type of advertising, because if it's not within the original RFP, I think you're going to need five votes for a bid waiver. If the commission decides to move it forward. And I want this question addressed with the other company that had some concerns about naming rights. I don't think it's an issue, but you're going to tell us that.
We'll look at all of these issues,
okay,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, and with that, so we're going to close this and send it back to the commission. Thank you. Okay, we had a 10:30 time certain. Kathy, which one was that? Remind me.
That was the GOB, the Arts and Culture GOB update.
Which item number?
23.
Okay. Discussion of possible action as needed regarding the GOB bonds for arts and culture approved by the voters on. Okay. Let's see. Who's doing this?
I get to do it today.
Okay. You're recognized. Go ahead.
Thank you. If we can.
And by the way, this is. I had just wanted. And by the way, Commissioner Ariola, this is your item. I put it here just because we can't have conversations, and I wanted to make sure it got before this body. But you've been leading on this, and you're going to continue to lead on this. So I only put my name on it because I wanted to make sure it got here. Yeah. And so what I asked staff to do is just give us a briefing from staff's perspective. It would be my goal also that we would hear from the cultural institutions at some point. I'm happy to partner with you on that. As I said, you've been leading, and I want you to continue leading on this. With that, you're recognized, Kathy.
Thank you. And if we could pull up the presentation, that'd be great. And you know, Kathy Brooks, interim CFO for the city. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to give an update and possible action item today. It's mainly information, as there has been limited information made available since the November referendum. We also have here today Maria Hernandez, who you all know has been coordinating the prior GO and who's been working extensively with Eric Carpenter on this. We have Allison Williams, who worked extensively on the last bond issue and is a consultant on this as well as Bond Council, Disclosure Council, and our City Attorney Office, all who have been working as a team on moving this forward. Next slide, please. Next slide. Thank you. As you know, the $159 million in funding was approved in November of 22. This is a full listing of all the projects that were involved. Some of these projects have sub-projects. For example, the Miami City Ballet has the facility, as well as $4 million for workforce housing. North Beach Oceanfront has the Oceanfront Center, as well as the Coral Rock House. But this is a comprehensive listing of what the voters approved, and it was strong approval at almost 65%. Important to note, not included in the referendum, we do have some costs, underwriting costs, FA, Bond Council, et cetera, that we will be providing a funding source for those. What's, next slide, please. What's different about these funds? The city bonds typically are issued for city facilities owned by the city, used by the facility, which was fairly straightforward in terms of Bond Council tax analysis and bond structure. These are obviously a lot different. And one of the more intensive tasks underway by Bond and Disclosure Council and, you know, their tax council specifically is an analysis of which projects are tax exempt and which may be taxable. Just really briefly, tax exempt bonds may be issued for facilities owned, operated, and used by state or local government or qualified non-governmental entities, depending on certain factors. If we can have the next slide, please. I'm sorry, I'm not doing that often enough. So you have the sort of factors that are being considered. Taxable bonds may be used to issue used to finance capital expenditures for facilities that do not qualify for tax exempt, and certain factors such as amount of private use, private ownership, and type of project being financed. Very importantly is to note that failure to comply with rules and regulation can cause tax-exempt bonds to be taxable retroactively to the date of issuance. You know, since bonds are issued with call dates, you know, dates before which bond holders do not expect them to be called, such refinancing can be very expensive. So All of that is to say that it's a very detailed analysis that council is doing. Next slide, please. We do need to make a determination prior to bond issuance, but tax-exempt bonds do allow for a certain de minimis amount, typically 5 to 10% of the proceeds of tax-exempt bonds to be used to finance capital expenditures for facilities which are not owned, operated, or used by state and local government. Taxable debt is higher. You're looking at 0.8 to 0.9% higher interest rate. And it's an important analysis because while taxable debt is more expensive, you don't want to have to refinance, as I mentioned, inappropriate tax-exempt debt, which is actually even more expensive and you can lead you to investigations, et cetera. Next slide, please. Maria has been working extensively on determining the number of tranches, as we did with the prior bond issue authorized in 2018. And she's been using a similar methodology of quick wins, shovel ready, and you know the more complex project. And that's going on in parallel to the council, in bond council analysis, so we don't have to be held up by one or the other. Next slide, please. So she's looking probably at two tranches instead of one. She's evaluating the issuance of, you know, one versus two based on anticipated cash flow needs. There are higher issuance costs, obviously, when you're doing two instead of one, but that results in lower initial taxes paid by the property owners as those tax increases are phased in over time. And, you know, your property owners are not paying for projects that will not be underway until future years. Next slide, please. We're also looking at some potential for interim financing options prior to the availability of bond proceeds, but these have costs as well. So, you know, debt issuance costs, fees for both undrawn proceeds as well as interest on drawn proceeds. So we have that moving forward. Next slide, please. In terms of the timeline we're looking at, as I mentioned, right now in the first quarter of the calendar year, we're looking at bond council tax determination, and we're hoping to bring to you on the February 22nd agenda the underwriter recommendation to the commission. In the second quarter, we'll be looking to have the first and second public hearing to adopt the bond sale resolutions, and then looking to close by third quarter, the summer, at which point we will have the bond proceeds in hand. Just an update for you, because I know this had been a question raised in the past. This shows the impacts per 100,000 of the various bond issues going forward. So you're looking at a combined impact and the years in which we anticipate, you know, our property owners would be impacted. And this is based on the cash flows for the 2018 referendum bonds and just a combined impact right now for the 22 referendum bonds, because Maria's doing that analysis. But the combined impact over the 10 years is about $82 per 100,000. Next slide, please. The only action item we have for you today is that on the February 1st agenda, there is an administration recommendation to allocate a portion of the miscellaneous category bonds. If you remember back to slide 4, there were $3 million in miscellaneous category, and we are recommending up to $1.5 million as additional funding for the Collins Park Performing Arts Venue Rotunda. That project is already ready to go to bid and will likely need funding in the summer of this year, coincident with the timing for when we expect to issue the bonds. It provides small organizations with a performance venue, and it provides for the renovation of the rotunda, such as HVAC, as well as the addition of restrooms and a covered walkway. We are simultaneously pursuing a grant for that, as we often do, so that $1.5 million could be reduced. The balance of the $1.5 million in the miscellaneous category would then still have to be determined. So this is at February 1st, so, you know, if we could get your endorsement, that would be great.
Let me ask a couple of questions. Thank you for the briefing on this. First, with respect to taxable non, how is an institution like the Wolfsonian, which is part of FIU, that's a state school, so is that, even though we don't own it, would that be considered, do you know if that would be eligible for tax free, or do we know?
Do you want to? I'm going to have our bond council issue that, and that's because, Commissioner, I've gotten very cautious in answering those questions because it is a very involved process.
Good morning. Tell us who you are.
Good morning. Lewis Ryder, Esquire, Patent Box.
Thank you.
I guess I do have a question. Is the Wolfsonian a separate 501c3 or is it part of FIU? That's sort of a critical
They're
question.
They're both. The Wolfsonian is part of FIU, which is a state entity, but this property may be owned by their foundation, which is a 501c3.
So to the extent there's a 501c3 involved, even though it is a not-for-profit, that is private use and private for purposes of the IRS rules. So it would be – I mean, it doesn't mean you can't do it. We just have to go through the analysis.
Probably the same with the – Jewish Museum, which is also part of FIU, isn't it?
That's right.
I believe Jewish Museum is a 501c3, is my recollection.
It is part of FIU, and I believe it is also separately owned by the foundation.
So, unfortunately, that requires it. Doesn't mean we won't be able to do it. It just requires the analysis.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. And then, Kathy, I think you said that 5 to 10%, if we do a tax-free, is that the range?
Right. It's probably going to be 5%. You have to have a related use for 10%. So let's assume it's not 10%. It's 5%. It will depend on how big the deal is. So if we only do a portion of the financing and you're issuing $50 million, let's say, part of that 5% gets eaten up by other costs. So you probably won't have a full 5%. So it's not a lot of money. You're talking, what, $2.5 million at most?
Yeah.
I know when we did the prior financing, which was larger, we were able to fit something for the Fillmore. I don't remember exactly what. I think it may have been a small piece as part of the bad money because it was a larger deal. I think we did 100 and – I can't remember the number, 150-something million.
150-something.
Right. So that there was a larger sort of 5% to use. Mm-hmm. Here, with a small deal, it's going to be a pretty small amount.
Okay. So in a situation like this, we're going to have the option of – making the decision that we want to use taxable bonds because there's probably not very much that's going to be eligible?
Well, not necessarily. Okay. Without getting into all the weeds, one way to avoid all of this is to do grants. To the extent the city is willing to do grants, and they have to be true grants. I mean, we can't have sort of an arrangement to pay back. But if the city is willing to do true grants, there are ways to finance these as governmental bonds and not have a problem with the private use. And we've done that. As an example, the county, which we've worked on, the county GO program that funded a lot of cultural facilities, most of those were funded as grants to avoid some of the tax issues that we're dealing with.
So then with the institutions, we take the money, we do a grant and a grant agreement. So
correct.
I assume we can still tie them to performance in the grant, right?
You can, but you can't sort of require them to sort of take action if they don't perform to force them to perform, but you can't have an agreement where they have to return the money. It has to be a true grant under the IRS.
But we could have an agreement requiring specific performance.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And Mr. Chair, our city attorney's office has been working on that grant agreement, has been talking with bond counsel, and we hope to have a draft shortly that we can share with them and get everybody comfortable with that.
Right. And to your point, Commissioner, that the grant would be on a reimbursement basis. So if someone is not performing, then they're not going to get reimbursed, and which is different from what Lewis is talking about of a requirement to refund the entire grant.
Okay, but I think what you need to at least be prepared to address is if they don't have the ability to pay to get reimbursed, how would they deal with that issue, right? Like if they don't have the cash flow and – because I would prefer to do a reimbursement, but if they don't have the cash flow to fund it, then how do we deal with that?
Reimbursement the other way, right?
That is a separate issue that and we're dealing with in the grant templates for advancing initial funding for these projects.
Okay, good. All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it. So, Kathy, with respect to the rotunda, I'm not opposed to the recommendation. But I am curious if there are other options. So, for example, we're getting ready to close out the first quarter, right?
Correct.
And we're going to have a surplus there.
I think so.
You think so? All right. We hope to have. And yeah, and I've got some other ideas. But so I want to at least explore if there's funding from another place. Or maybe the answer is, Kathy, that we know that we can use this money. So if I do have money in another place, I can use that for a lot of other different things, right?
That would be the administration's recommendation.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, are you comfortable with that? Because this project's shovel ready, right?
Yes.
I mean, when I say it's shovel ready, it's you got the shovel in hand, right?
It will be in June.
All right. And have the drawings been done?
I believe they're at 100%, right, David? It's CIP's project, so.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go to the chair.
Yes.
and just because I'm hearing from other organizations in our community that are shovel-ready as well, that tranche one for quick mm-hmm. wins and shovel-ready projects, when again is it that we're looking at bringing that to commission?
Which ones would be in tranche one versus tranche two?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking? We would have to have that for the bond resolutions, which were coming in second quarter.
Yeah, I would like to take that also to the GEO Bond Committee. We did that in the first bond. They helped us also determine the tranches, and we've been meeting with every institution to kind of understand exactly what their timelines are, and that's what's also going to determine what's in tranche one and what could be pushed out to tranche two.
But when do we expect that coming?
It would be towards the end of first quarter, so like March, April.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly May time frame, but we'd be hoping for March, April.
Did this question of the rotunda, did you take that to the GEO Bond Committee?
Not yet. We did not have quorum in January, so we weren't able to take it.
Okay.
So it's going straight to the commission on February 1.
Okay. Yeah, I'm okay with it because we may have some other money, but this money, there's $3 million of general, right?
Correct.
And we've got a shovel-ready project. Mm-hmm. Project's been delayed for many years.
And it's a city.
We own it.
So are you guys comfortable with this? I can support a favorable recommendation if one of you guys want to move it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So show it done unanimously. We'll send that back to the commission on February 1st with a unanimous recommendation to allocate the 1.5 out of the 3, which will still leave another 1.5 of funding available.
Correct.
And maybe Kathy's going to find some additional surplus that she's going to let us know about soon. Okay.
Yes, along with all the other needs.
I know. Listen, we have a long list of capital projects that need funding. I know. And top on the list is to make sure we close out the Collins Park workforce housing project. And I think we're very close to doing that, and hopefully without any additional funding. So, all right, we'll do this. I want to keep this item here, and let's bring it back in. I don't know if you're going to be ready in
February 17th is a little tight. If
yeah,
we could bring
so,
it back in March,
mm-hmm.
I think that would be good.
Let's do that.
And Mr. Chair, what would be great is when it comes back, if we know if there are certain shovel-ready projects mm-hmm. from the organizations, if you can include that with the materials, because I'm hearing from different organizations,
yes.
But I think it's good to have an official, you know, record of that, just so we know moving forward.
I think you all have been meeting with
yes.
them, and you have a spreadsheet on
an
what
expanded
you think
chart.
Is, but I think at some point, and Commissioner Ariel, again, this is really your item. I feel like we need to have a hearing, maybe a special hearing, to hear from the, especially the ones that say, that think they're shovel ready,
yep.
so that we can vet those and make sure that we're comfortable moving on them quickly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the sooner we can get the ball rolling, the better we're going to serve our community. The overwhelming support for this, the expectation from the community is that these things are going to come online
mm-hmm.
sooner rather than later. So let's get rolling.
Maria, are you getting to a place with your spreadsheet that you are going to be able to tell us what you think is shovel ready and what is not shovel ready?
I can tell you where we are so far.
You don't need to do that today, but
okay.
I think Commissioner, at the March meeting.
Okay.
She'll be very comfortable, correct?
Yeah. Because right, I'll be able to meet with everyone, and then by that time we'll know
let's
everything.
Let's make that as a goal. Mm-hmm. Then we'll bring this back in March. But I think in March we may want to have a special meeting to hear from the ones that you believe are special ready, and we want to question them and vet them as well. Okay? But we can talk.
That we'd be looking for a date for a special committee
yeah,
mission.
Yeah. Okay. But we'll talk about that. What date is the March meeting? Do we know? I can't remember.
Yes, I do have it here. The March meeting is March 31st.
March 31st, so the end of March. So we may want to do something. Do you think that you won't be ready by February 17th to tell us which ones you think are shovel-ready, or will you?
I have to check my calendar and see how many institutions we have not yet met with.
Let's do this.
So I don't
Let's
know.
Make that as a goal to get as close as we can to that, because I may call a special meeting of this committee in early March, because I don't want to wait till the end of March, because we're losing too much time,
okay,
to hear from the ones that are that we think are shovel-ready, so we can hear their plans and hear from them so that we can make a recommendation back to the commission.
We can also at that time tell you what we think quick wins are.
Yeah.
Because we have both. We have
right.
shovel-ready and quick wins.
That's what we, exactly. That's mm-hmm. what those two categories.
So just to be clear, communication to Commissioner, we have a goal for
yep.
February 17th. We'll touch bases with you before that date to determine whether or not we need a special meeting in March.
And the goal is just to try to get as close as we can to what we, the city, believes is shovel-ready and quick wins.
Okay.
Okay?
Correct.
Doesn't have to be 100%. Complete, mm-hmm. just to give us a starting point that if Commissioner Arreola, again, it's his
very
item, if we want to have a meeting in early March to hear from those institutions so that we're comfortable that they are, in fact, ready.
We'll put caveats all over the presentation.
Yep. Great.
Thank
okay,
you.
With that, we'll hopefully, let's keep it on for February 17th and also for March with this limited scope, okay? And if we need to defer it, we will. Okay, with that, thank you very much. I appreciate
you.
Your input.
Sure.
With that, we had an 11 o'clock time certain.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I am withdrawing item 22 that has been solved.
Withdrawing, thank you very much
yes.
for that. Withdrawing item 22. Okay, so we had an 11 o'clock on the pension issue one, I believe. That's item 7. So this item has been in committee for several months. Let me just say that this was something that Commissioner Gongora had that got transferred to Commissioner Samuelin, I believe, and then I picked it up as the chair. Originally because we've had, I know Commissioner Gongora had a break between service under B and C, and he only got 4 years into C. But forget about the elected officials for a moment. We have 6 or 7 employees that have been affected by this, including having a requirement that they vest twice, which I personally think is wrong, that someone would have to vest in both because the city changed their pension plan. But with that, I'm going to recognize you, and we've been working on this for several months. So go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, Sonia Walthour, Human Resources Department. I think, you know, we, like you said, have worked on this for a while, and I think we have a solution for those people who were affected by originally working under Tier B and now coming back and working under Tier C who have vested under B, and so that they don't have to vest again. They left their money. They don't have to vest again. I think what this recommended change to the ordinance does is allow them to keep their years under B. When they retire, they'll retire at age 55, which is the B retirement age. They will have the multiplier under B, but they will also have their time under Tier C, which the years under Tier C, they will have the 2.5 multiplier. So.
Okay. So, and I know first of all, I just want to thank you because we have been working on this for a long time, and it took a lot of work coordinating with outside counsel and so forth. But if we adopt this, an employee will no longer those employees will have the situation corrected, right, in that they won't have to qualify or vest two different times, right?
Exactly.
So, and the other thing we're addressing is with charter officers and electeds, because there's a five-year requirement, someone has to run for re-election, or in the case of Commissioner Gongora, who was in B and vested and came back and served in C and only had 4 years, then he doesn't get any credit at all for that 4 years, which is not right. And we've got situations like former Commissioner Joy Malakoff, who has 4 years and 9 months. She's 3 months short of getting her little $500 a month, whatever the pension would be. John Alleman and others who, Commissioner Grieco and others that served 4 years, it's just wrong. And the other thing is we are going to have a meeting to talk about our Inspector General. You know, he has a four-year contract. If for whatever reason his contract is not renewed, then he would lose all of his pension, and I think things like that are wrong. So with that, gentlemen, do you have any questions? Can we send this back to the commission with a favorable recommendation? Okay, it's been moved. Commissioner Fernandez will second it.
So Commissioner, we've drafted the ordinance. It is included here. The one question that I have for you, and I know the clerk will kill me, is would you want this placed as an addendum item for Wednesday's, for first reading for Wednesday's commission meeting? The item is ready. It'll be this identical
yes.
item that's before
the
you
The answer is yes.
Okay, we'll
and
do
And we'll
that.
Show this done unanimously. And also I want to, I don't know if Jim is listening, but I would just want to thank Jim also for helping on this, because I know it was very much a collaborative effort and took a lot of work to get us to where we are.
Yes, Jim Lynn was following. I couldn't see him here on the Zoom, but yes, our longtime pension counsel did work with us on drafting the ordinance, and we're very appreciative for his assistance.
Thank you, Sonia, for all the hard work.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we'll show this one.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just have a question, because I know that in the past, retirees would get health insurance benefits. Is that still the case? Does that apply here?
Right. So there is a 2006 ordinance regarding your health benefits. If you were hired after the date of that ordinance, that 2006 ordinance, instead of getting the portion that the city determines each year for your contribution towards health, there's a stipend. So the stipend is $10 for every year of service up to an amount of $250 a month, or if you're over age 65, it's up to $125 a month.
For clarification for the commissioner, if I may?
Please, you recognize.
So the question I think really is that stipend that's available to other retirees, if this change is made, would it then be applied to the elected officials, for
yes.
example?
Yes. That ordinance, that part of the ordinance doesn't change.
So like, for example, even like the Inspector General, Inspector General that he's been here, he hasn't vested yet. He's been here 4 years. If let's say he's only here 4 years, he would be able to benefit from that stipend.
We have to look at that because what's proposed here is the pension ordinance, which would vest you're talking about the Inspector General, would vest him within 4 years of service. The retirement benefit is in a different section of the code where we cover health benefits, and I don't know if the time period, if it's only available for retirees that had a certain number of years of service. It used to be 10 years of service
right.
at one point in time.
It's five.
It's five now.
Five.
Okay.
So, and I want to keep that as a separate issue if that's okay.
Sure.
But I mean, it's a really good point and something that we need to look at. So maybe you can look at that.
We can look at that. If you're going to amend the vesting period here for pension purposes.
I want to move this because we spent months working on it.
No. Understood. The point is if you're going to amend the vesting period for the pension service, it should conform with the retirement benefits as well. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. That's exactly the point.
So let's I don't want to amend this because we've been working on it a long time and I want to get it done. But let's look at the issue and if you want to sponsor an item or however we want
to. We can work together.
Yeah.
This is your forte. You've done great work.
It should be consistent, okay?
Understood.
But that may take a little bit of time, and I don't want to delay this. So with that, thank you again for all the work on this. Kathy, did you have any other questions on this? So we'll, you know what we're going to do, so we'll close this up when I item out of this, okay? All right, let's see what else I've got here. Let's take this, the composting. I think we can do that one quickly. Let's take 14 and 15 together. That's my item, and Commissioner Fernandez on composting. Where are we? Are we in the middle of renegotiating the botanical garden contract? Kathy, do you know that, or who can tell us?
No, I do not have that answer.
Hi.
Good morning, Commissioners. Lindsay Precht, Assistant Director of the Environment and Sustainability Department.
Okay, hang on just a second.
They had a one last renewal. They've been extended for another 5-year period.
So they're under an extension now for 5 years. So why? I know that we, the city, hired them to do this composting, which makes total sense. But it's kind of a separate agreement. Is that because their original agreement, we weren't doing that composting program at the time, and that's why it's not in the original agreement?
I can't answer that specifically. I can look into that. But, yes, it's very likely that the composting came after, and it was done as some part of an amendment or one of the, more current amendments.
But they're operating under
the Conservancy is operating a current contract, 5 years.
When does that terminate, do you know?
We just renewed it, actually 4 years, so thank you, Ozzy, for clarifying, 4 years. July of 22, we issued a renewal, and 4 years later.
Okay, good. All right, thank you. Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us about composting. I know that when we were doing the food distribution, we used one of the sites when we had some produce that was in less than stellar condition. And we have the site here, and we have one in North Beach, and I've oftentimes wondered about Mid-Beach, and I think you had the same question. So go ahead.
Yes, definitely. The composting program has become increasingly popular, and there are opportunities to expand to more residents, particularly Mid-Beach, because we do have the location here at the Garden, as well as a location in North Beach. Food scraps and yard waste make up approximately 20 to 30% of what is discarded, which approximately makes up 35 million tons of food waste per year. At the current interest of the community, if there is an opportunity to expand to Mid-Beach, we've looked at 3 potential locations. But to open a successful community composting hub, it has to meet certain requirements. So area requirements, access for a dump truck, easy access to the public, parking spots that are designated for a specific time frame, access to electric plugs, and space to hold community workshops within that fenced-in area. So based on these minimum conditions, environment and sustainability staff met with Parks and the Parking Department to identify these 3 potential locations. The 3 potential locations in Mid-Beach that were identified include the 40th Street parking lot, the 42nd Street parking lot, and the Indian Beach Park parking lot. The proposed locations offer different advantages and disadvantages depending on location. Depending on the site selected, 1 or 2 parking spaces could be set aside at specific time frames as temporary parking for drop-off, but they would not take away any parking spaces. In addition, we'd incorporate bicycle racks so people would be encouraged to ride their bikes. Based on the experience with the North Beach Composting Hub, it would cost approximately $75,000 in the first year and then $50,000 for future years.
Questions there. We have a community garden in Pine Tree Park right now. So is there a way that we could do this and co-locate it at the same location so some of the composting may be used by the gardeners? Have we looked at that?
Let me look into it with staff to see if it meets those minimum requirements. These were the best locations that we identified with Parks and the Parking Department, but we can take a look at Pine Tree Park.
Yeah, I'd like to look at that. I don't know that I want to have this in a... I know the one in North Beach is located with a parking lot, but there's also some green space around that. So, and you think we need $75,000 in funding, right? So
for the first year.
So, Commissioner Ariola, if you're comfortable with this, what I'd like to do is direct staff to include this in the next fiscal budget so that you have some planning time to do that. Are you okay with that? So Kathy showed that done unanimously, that we're asking you to incorporate this into the fiscal year 24 budget, which would start. And in the meantime, we'll figure out if it's what the location is. Wonderful. But I think we've got some agreement we can move forward on this.
Can I put a slight tweak to that?
Please.
That included part of the budget process, because we'll compile with evaluation of everything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was my intention, that we'll, as we start working through the budget, we'll just incorporate it. Okay? And then if you'll look into Pine Tree, and then maybe you and I can get a separate meeting, and we'll look at these locations so we'll have a little bit more time.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you very much. Thank you. I know that Commissioner Fernandez had to step out for just a moment. Let's see. Commissioner Arreola, you had item 11, the Tyler Technologies. Let's call that.
Okay. I think this is an update, so we'll call up the staff. But we've talked about this before, and it's been going on for years. You know, many, many years ago, we upgraded, our technology stack, particularly as it pertains to the interface that interacts with, residents and businesses that have to do things like, filing for permits and dealing with the city, Tyler Technologies. We had some fits and starts with them, and I wanted to get an update and see where we're at, and then see if there are any recommendations on where we might go.
Okay. You're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioner.
We know who you are, but tell us who you are.
Yes, sir. Frank Quintana, CIO with the City of Miami Beach IT Department. So I want to try to keep this brief and give you an incremental upgrade from where we were last time. So we've had three significant accomplishments since the last review. The first was, part of the initiative that we had was to ensure that the Tyler applications were all running the newest versions with the maximum number of features and functionality that were available at the time. We are happy to report now that all of the major products are running current versions, which was not the case before, and it was creating some inconsistencies with the technology. One of the more time-consuming initiatives that the departments worked on with us on was to do a major records cleanup. A lot of the records that were brought over from the previous system were not done in a way that was technologically sustainable. So you would look up records, the system would slow down. It was kind of a messy situation that needed to be cleaned up. We're actually complete a month ahead of schedule. We have noticed that there's been some system performance improvements as a result of that, and it's something that we're actively working on with the different departments to make sure that moving forward there's a better process in place with the way that we kind of manage that. And additionally, I also wanted to share that as a result of the e-reviews that were implemented a couple years ago, that we've discussed the ability to do more of this digitally. We continue to see a drop in the number of requests that are done for inspections over the telephone, which really shows that it's a direct adoption of the more e-review kind of portion of that. So since 2019, those inspection requests have dropped by 48%, which is a sizable number, and we have the the reporting behind that if you'd like to discuss that in more detail. One of the other things that we committed to was to ensure, as Commissioner Arreola had requested, that we're maximizing our investment with the city and utilizing the most, that we can with the solutions there. So we've identified a couple of areas where there was a technology or a solution available from Tyler as part of the suite of software that wasn't properly implemented or hadn't been addressed yet. So because of the work that's been done over the last 12 to 18 months with a lot of cleanup and stabilization, we're now actively working implementing their Tyler 311 product. Essentially what that does, it consolidates a lot of citizen records and the non-emergency incidents that come into the system. So not just the permitting and the inspection portion, but the rest of it. And that in combination with the cleanup really helps some of the internal process related things that the city does more directly. There are three things that we're targeting to fix with that. The first, or to improve, I should say, code compliance is going to be able to take in requests more comprehensively than they did before through a single system. So they'll be able to follow requests from an inspection request to enforcement to violation, whereas before they were looking at different locations for that. So that's going to help improve services. On the building front, some of the improvements with the 311 module are going to help the call center operations when residents or constituents call businesses. They'll have a more comprehensive look at everything that's happened transactionally. And we're also working with parking and code to help improve some of the dispatch. So a lot of these are internal process improvement things that are going to make several steps forward because of the 3-1 portion. We've also talked at previous committee meetings or in briefings about the ability to do more automation or more prescriptive type of configuration for the systems. And we're looking to start implementing their decision engine later this spring through late summer. What that does is it'll be a digital guide or a digital helper, and you'll go in and be able to determine, you know, if I want to open this type of permit or if I want to do this. It'll kind of give you a script of these are the things you need to follow through to be able to deliver on those things, which should help some of the confusion and, you know, some of the complaints we've heard from residents. There are a couple of other things. We're actively engaged with Tyler to do an investment assessment, which, again, Commissioner, ties into, you know, the initial spirit of this request. And they're going to look at the way that we've adopted or implemented general ledger, accounts payable, accounts receivable, contract management, the different components of that, and figure out where we are with the way that it was applied versus what features are available to improve that. So I'd say that any number of the things that we've talked about, they're all kind of tweaks that are going to get us to a better place, but we can't point to one specific thing and say, this is the golden, you know, bullet or the silver bullet, because if it were, that would have been addressed already. As it pertains to assessments, the building department is actively waiting for solicitations on a process improvement engagement so that we could revisit that. My understanding from speaking to building is the initial pass of that didn't bring in any bidders the first time around, so it was a second modified one that went out, and we should be getting that back at the beginning of February. We would expect that to take several months to completion, but it's another aspect of what we're doing to improve this. Next, Tyler Payments is another module that's available to us that we have not implemented or looked at yet. What that does, for residents that have shared concerns over having multiple places to go pay to interact with the city, it's essentially going to help us, if adopted, consolidate all the different payment ways that residents and businesses interact with the city into a single kind of, you know, portal that they could look at, and it makes it much easier for them to interact with the city, which should help with both training internally and training externally. So that's kind of the next benchmark we have not started and we're looking at. And finally, as part of the assessment that we've been doing, we've identified that the city really lacks a CRM system, which I know you're very familiar with. Unfortunately, you know, adopting this earlier when we knew that this was a need for the city wasn't feasible because we had so many other limitations and some of the other things that needed to be improved, that had we implemented that type of solution early, it likely, frankly, would have failed because there were other underlying issues as part of that. So we hope to pilot a solution later this year, late summer, hopefully, early fall. It's something we've put in a enhancement request for next year's budget to be able to turn into a more sustainable, you know, platform. And we've identified some internal departments that we could probably pilot that with that would be kind of a high, you know, high reward, low risk type of thing. So we look forward to getting to that a little later in the year.
Thanks for that briefing. Just listening to you, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you're more optimistic than maybe you were several months back. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm not hearing a lot of hesitancy in your voice about your satisfaction with the system and potentially moving forward with this platform.
So what I would say to that is, you know, as with all technology, and I know this is coming from the IT guy, so it's, you know, I understand that. With all technology, there are going to be problems, right? But the reason you may hear some of that, you know, kind of measured optimism now is we have a much better handle, holistically, you know, strategically with where we are and where we're going. This early in its process, we did an RFI out to look at what other options were available in the market. And what we found was, you know, Tyler has an overwhelming market share majority of all the other products. So given that, one of the things we chose was, look, if we were to go out and do an RFP, there's a good chance we would have ended up here again regardless. The number two provider that's out there is the provider that we replaced with Tyler, right? So everything after that either does a component of what we have, little bits and pieces, and that brings other technical issues, or we would be looking at building everything from scratch, which is a number that we've never talked about, but none of you would probably want to consider. So considering where the market is today, we felt that this is probably the best of the options. There are limitations. There are specific departments that have very specific issues, things we would like to be different. From a technical perspective, we've really had more of an issue with support, which is something that we get very frustrated with because we're in the service business as well, right? It's probably good enough for now, despite the fact that it's not great. Now, our expectation is in the next 12 to 18 months, probably when we've completed the scope of what we have discussed, we will have adopted everything that's possible with them. So we should be in a state where this is as good as it's going to get. Now we evaluate, you know. And then maybe in 12 or 18 months, at the rate that the market changes, there may be other options out there. But right now, we just don't feel that it's feasible, either financially or through resources in and out of the departments, that we should be looking at replacing this today. Because, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of these steps are meant to improve. A lot of them are process improvements. Those are things that would have to happen, whether we stick with the solution or not. So we've tried to take the let's control what we can, you know, angle and take it from there and see where that leads us.
So you mentioned that you're going to have, a funding request to do some pilot. Do you have a rough order of magnitude of?
So the request for this year, we're looking to fund through some external funding opportunities here at the city for the POC. We've taken a broad kind of educated guess based on what we've seen out in the market. It's about $500,000 for year two. That may be more or less. It depends on where we are with the POC that we do at this point. But it would not be the type of solution that we go from zero to 100% anyway. So we would phase it in. We would have to onboard departments. There'd be a process. So we think that probably the $500 for licensing and professional services is probably a reasonable amount for year two.
Kathy, have you, I don't know if you all have met and if you're working on that as part of the budget cycle.
Frank has been working with Tamika, and I believe what you said was you have that funding, the $500,000 or not?
That's the request for next fiscal.
Next year.
Yeah, that's
but he has it in the budget enhancement request.
Yeah.
You have it in, you're going to put it in your request.
Yes. It's in the request, and we're meeting, I think, in the next couple of weeks to do our first pass at our budget, so we'll discuss it at length there.
Okay, so it's on your radar. Okay. All right. Can we? What do you want to do? Do you want to keep this here, Commissioner Ariolo? Do you want to close it? What would you like to do?
Why don't we bring it back in 3 months?
Perfect.
90 days.
All right.
So
let's
120
do
days, either one, whatever you think. 120 days better than 90.
It depends on, based on where we are with the timeline. Some of the deadlines or milestones that we have, I think, maybe a little past that.
Yeah, I'm trying to time it for all the milestones you were talking about. I don't know what those dates are.
I think probably early fall, if we can, because I should be able to give you a substantial amount. Yeah, if that's reasonable,
Let's bring it. I have a feeling we're going to hear a little bit more about it during the budget cycle. So we will probably be hearing it about it then. But worst case, let's bring it back for the July meeting. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And if it's not ready then, we'll defer it.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
But as I said, I think we'll be talking about it before then. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I got another couple of quick ones. Jose, I see you there, and I think you're probably waiting on item 25, which is going to be less than 5 minutes. All we want to do is get a very quick update on where we are with Española Way East on the pedestrian cycle on that. So if you will let us know in 5 minutes or less where we are and when we can expect to see the rollout of the temporary. It's not going to be the permanent. Okay,
yes,
you're recognized.
Sir.
Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. PJ, if you could pull up the brief presentation, just 4 slides, to give you a status of where we are.
Okay.
Next slide. All right. So in terms of completed tasks, At the September 30th FERC committee meeting, we received direction to move forward within the budget that we have available, which is $200,000 for tactical urbanism, to move forward with Española Way East, Española Way West, and the 14th Place alleyway. Tactical urbanism improvements there. Those were shared on September 30th with the FERC committee. We received an endorsement. We then started designing the tactical urbanism improvements. That is where we currently are. We expect the plans, the design plans, to come in next month, by the end of next month. We've been coordinating with the county because the tactical urbanism improvements include a partial closure of Española Way from east, which is from Collins, from Washington to Collins Avenue. Partial closure, the closure will begin at Washington Avenue, but emergency vehicles will be allowed access, but all other vehicles will not. But there is an alleyway there, Collins Court, which is a functional alleyway that intersects Española Way, that block. So we need to maintain that alleyway open. That's why there will be partial closure along the eastern half of Española Way East. Allow alleyway traffic to flush out and go towards Collins Avenue and exit.
This tactical, we're doing all three together, the Española Way, the West, the East, and the 14th Court. Is that right?
Yes.
It's all being designed. So you think you're going to have the design ready, you said next month. Are we talking about February or March?
End of February.
End of February. Okay. And then is the plan to bring, do you need to bring that design back to us, or can we move forward? You don't need anything else from us in terms from the commission because it's already been approved for you to move ahead, right?
That's correct. We have not had a community meeting yet, Mr. Chair. We've had meetings with stakeholders, including the Washington Avenue bid, Española Way property owners.
Is it the plan to have a community meeting after you have the design?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. So, members, what I just want to get a quick update. So what we're going to do is, Kathy, let's bring this back in March. When you have the design, you're not going to have the design before February 17th, are you?
I don't think so.
And we're not meeting until March 31st. So, members, do you want us to look at the design before they have a community outreach, or can, because that's going to, we're basically going to lose about a month of time.
I don't want to lose time. So, whatever we'll expedite, because it's been a long time coming.
A long time.
And maybe we can just...
I said typically at those community meetings, they're gathering input. They're not really making any decisions.
Because the idea, I guess, would be great to incorporate some of that community input into the design. And if I may, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gonzalez, have we had any preliminary conversation with the county about this project? I'm a full supporter. I was proud to co-sponsor with you and support your leadership in this because it really just activates the space so well. But have we had any preliminary conversations, specifically with Commissioner Higgins, on this, since she is the chair of the Transportation Committee at the county, as well as the district commissioner for the area? Mm-hmm.
Well, the project has been shared with county staff. The county reviewed and has not yet approved the traffic study because the traffic data collection that we conducted was done when Washington Avenue was under a pilot configuration. So they came back and they said it's no longer under that configuration, so we had to recollect data. We've shared that data with county staff. We have not communicated with Commissioner Higgins' office.
But we don't have to, at this point, we don't need, we've got the approvals to close the street, I think, right? So or is that question?
We're waiting for the county's approval of the traffic study. That would be the approval to close the street.
And when is that anticipated? Do we know?
We think within the next within the next month. They've had the traffic study already, so we think within the next 30 days we'll be able to get that.
So let's do this. Let's bring this back to this committee March 31st. You're going to have a design before March 31st, you need to reach out to the county. You should have you should have your design. You can do your community outreach meeting to get input from the community, and you should have an answer from the traffic study from the county. And as Commissioner Fernandez mentioned, please reach out to Commissioner Higgins' office, right?
Well, and Mr. Chair, if I may, what I would like is, it's great that you're reaching out to DTPW over the county as the political body. I think it's only proper for us to be the ones to reach out to our counterpart. Would you be interested in maybe having a sunshine meeting with Commissioner Higgins where we could invite her and show her what we're proposing in her district? I would hate for her to find out through her staff.
Sure. I think it's a great idea. Let's wait, though, until we get the – you're going to have the design by the end of February.
Right.
And then so in early March, let's do a sunshine meeting with Commissioner Higgins. I'm happy to partner with you. I think that'd be great. So when you come back March 31st, you will have already done – you'll have your design. You will have done community outreach. And we will have already had a meeting with Commissioner Higgins, and you should have something from the county after the traffic study. So we should have some certainty there. So let's plan on that. Kathy, you got what we want? Okay, with that, we're going to close the
item.
Thank you. One other quick one I want to do is the potential for 7605 Collins Avenue, so we get property management so I can get you out of here, maybe or maybe not. So we just heard this in land use. Remember, there are some requests for some zoning changes on this small parcel, but there's also been Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez has asked us to look whether or not the city should purchase this lot. With that, have any appraisals been done?
So through the chair, Adrian Morales, facilities director, and with me, Ozzie Dominguez, real estate director. We have not done an appraisal. One of the things that we would, if the city is indeed considering purchasing it, we would like to conduct an appraisal of this property. As you noted in the memo, right now we do not have the dollars to potentially buy it. That's a discussion to have for how much. So what we could do is build an appraisal, order an appraisal, then come back and then have a more substantive discussion, which would go through the process of after we just finished the process of land use committee.
We have a relationship. We already have somebody under contract. That
it would be relatively quickly. We would probably get an appraisal in 4 weeks.
3 to 4 weeks.
Gentlemen, I would like to get an appraisal on the property. I don't, you know, previously a year and a half ago when we were looking at those two front lots where the library was at the time we were told that the two lots together were not worth $10 million. I don't know what this lot is worth, but the location of it next to the park, I think this body should at least look at the possibility of whether or not we want to purchase it. We're at the same time looking at some rezoning on it as well. So if there's no objection from my colleagues, let's order an appraisal. You think you can have that in 4 weeks?
3 to 4 weeks. We could probably rush it a little bit, but and we can come back.
And can we get – is it possible to get two appraisals?
Sure, could.
I'd like two independent appraisals. And – let's bring this back March 31st.
And if there's a, if I may,
yes, please.
If there's a big difference between the two appraisals, you know, a third, which is, I think is practice. I think the county does it that way.
Let's do this.
No, we actually look through the. I'm sorry, through the
Go
chair.
Ahead.
We actually look through the appraisals and evaluate them because sometimes there are significant reasons why one is different from the other. So we don't like just to take a midpoint.
Okay.
So let's do this. We're not meeting again. You won't be ready for March 17th. Let's put this, bring this back, I'm sorry, February 17th. March, put it on for March 31st. When you get the appraisals back, please reach out to us in separately so that you can brief us before that meeting. And if we think additional work, then we can at least, you know, give you some guidance even though we won't be in a formal setting, okay? So please move forward getting two independent appraisals.
This is item 21, not 19, right?
Correct.
This is item 21.
Yeah, item 19 was withdrawn.
Yeah, exactly. Just for purposes of the public, in case you're seeing it, says
good
19
point.
On the screen, it says 21.
There. Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Let's see. With that, I know you all have been waiting. Let's call item 18, discussion regarding upcoming expiration of the Nikki Beach lease. Commissioner No, this is facilities and fleet management. That's
hey,
right.
We'll just stay.
Hey,
we'll just stay.
Perfect.
Thank you.
I wanted to make a correction on the agenda for a record. This item was originally sponsored by Commissioner Arriola.
I thought so. I started to say that, error. And then I saw here. But so let me just ask the commissioner.
Inadvertently omitted, unfortunately.
Commissioner, would you like to tee it up for us?
Yeah, I'll tee it up and then hand it over. Yes. Yeah, so obviously, you know, a lot has changed in the decades since the original Penrods and now Nikki Beach has been servicing our community. As I understand it, I think that contract is up in about 3 years. And so, getting ahead of the game, because I know how long things take right. with RFPs and planning, community outreach, et cetera, rather than start that process of what if anything, we want to do with that property when the contract is up, get that ball rolling now. Start reaching out to the community, getting a vision, hearing from interested parties, et cetera. And I have some ideas, too, but why don't we hear from Adrian and
go ahead, Adrian, your
team, as to where we're at.
So, as Commissioner Arriola mentioned, this lease is set to expire on May of 2026. The city entered into an agreement with Penrods in 1985, with a facility being built in 1988. Upon expiration of the lease, the property transfers over from Penrods to the City of Miami Beach. That includes all equipment, the facility and all of the asset, not the personal property, but the asset. Typically in this kind of situation, we would pursue an RFP for the operation and management of a facility no different than we would Smith & Wolensky or other types of facilities like that. At this time, we don't know. One of the things to note is in 2028, this facility would approach the 40-year recertification. So anything we do would contemplate potentially that recertification. So as I mentioned, this we would do a market study to see what the market conditions for or the value of this property, and work collectively internally with the community to determine what the concept would be to develop an RFP for an operator for this restaurant facility.
And simultaneously, we also want to do a market evaluation to determine the value of the property before we get it out to do any RFP process, to have an understanding of that as well.
So that is where we are as it stands today, and we just wanted to,
So just more background for me, because I'm not from – we own the land out now, right?
Correct. We own the land. They pay us rent based on – the improvements on the land, the operation, and then they have a concession agreement for the section of, known as Pier Park for their concession in the back.
Okay. The building that's on there now, who owns the building? Like, if this contract ends after 40 years, which I think it was a 40-year, right?
It's so established in 1985, yes.
Okay, so after 40 years, we decide that we want to put a new city hall there or whatever. Is that our building? Does that building...
Everything related to this parcel transfers over officially to the city upon expiration of this lease. So in 2026, we get everything that's on it, everything in it, the entire thing is ours.
And it might be November 2025 for the expiration
of
the lease.
I think it was officially executed in May. And we'll confirm on the record.
It has a lease commencement from execution of 6 months after execution.
6 months after the effective date of the agreement. Got it.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
May of 26. Correct.
Has the city done any inspection of the building?
We have not. Another factor to consider is obviously, we would look at performing a facility condition assessment to understand, the structure, all of the condition, as we develop this RFP, we would go through that process.
Under the contract, do you have access to the building now to do a facility condition assessment, or would you have to get permission from the lessee?
We need to give them notice, which we have, and we've already started the bidding process for the facility condition assessment. So we expect that to be awarded in the next couple of weeks, and then we can start that process.
And how long will it take to get the assessment done?
It usually takes about 90 to 120 days to do a comprehensive assessment. Time it takes them to check every system. You're talking mechanical system, plumbing systems, electrical systems. I'm sure there are sub-consultants that they use that, you know, coordination is important. Safe 90 days or so, you know.
Commissioner Ariola, I know you've got some ideas. What are you thinking?
Well, I've got observations and ideas. You know, one is, you know, you can quickly see how fast the timeline can escape from us.
Right.
So that's why I wanted to get the ball rolling now, because there's a lot of ways this can go. Observations are, you know, this operator has, I think, served the community well for, you know, many decades. You know, we were something different in the 80s when it was, I think, originally a Woody's. I'm old enough to have been there when it was a Woody's. It was pretty cool. Then it was Penrod's, then Nikki Beach.
You said the 80s?
The 80s. I'm that old. But I do think it has now, and the neighborhood of the South of Fifth neighborhood where I lived for 20 years has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. And so in its current condition and the current operations, I do think it's sort of past its useful life. The building may be past its useful life in terms of architecture and stuff. I don't know. I don't know what the conditions are. I do think it's very important that we find out, you know, whether we have a Byron Carlyle on our hands. I don't think we do. Or, you know, the building's in good condition, just needs some maintenance. But I think, you know, the way it's currently operated, my personal feeling is it's past its due date. I don't think we need that kind of operation there anymore. I don't think it serves that neighborhood well or the Miami Beach brand that we're trying to attain. That's an observation. That's an opinion. As far as plans, you know, we can put this out to RFP. We can, you know, talk to current providers, you know, like Boucher Brothers, who, you know, obviously are all over the beach, for management agreements so that this is something that the city can control and we don't find ourselves in another 40-year lease where we're stuck with the operator. And we can have complete control over the operations and adapt as the markets change. But I do think we got to get that ball rolling now. And so, you know, I don't know, but I suspect, you know, there are people that we have management agreements with that would come forward with some ideas for our entertainment. The current operator obviously has that same right, as do any third parties. But I'd like to try to, one is assess the building condition, see if there's additional money that we as a city would have to put into it, because I think that'll influence our decision. And then also just to see what the market has for ideas.
Through the chair. Might it make sense, Commissioner, for them to come back after they've done that assessment, before they start doing any community outreach or visioning, because that could be affected by whether or not we need to tear down the building, use the building, et cetera? Would that make sense?
No.
No.
Yeah. For a lot of reasons, no. No. That's bureaucratic stuff. No. No. Because I know how long that'll take.
That assessment.
And then we'll want a second, third opinion. And we'll be here in a year and nothing will have gotten done. I would start with the community outreach. I would start with talking to third parties now. We could do that simultaneously with getting an assessment done on the condition of the building.
Commissioner Fernandez.
Thank you. And Commissioner Ariola, I agree. Nothing is worse than a rushed process. And so this is in 2026. 2026, it's not that far away. And as you well mentioned, in government, sometimes these things really do take time. And so we don't want to strangle public engagement. And I'm glad that you're bringing up that community engagement, reaching out to the community, having those conversations. Because I personally also want to make sure that space is occupied by someone with a track record, someone with a measurable track record, with a reputation, and someone that we will feel good placing in the middle of a very coveted and very special residential neighborhood in our city. And so going through this process now, engaging the community now, engaging stakeholders and engaging partners now makes sense. Let's get it going. Let's make sure that that we have a good vetting of this. Again, nothing is worse than waiting till the last minute. It's what gets us in trouble. It's what gets the community upset. And it really does strangle the public engagement. So I support starting this conversation.
So I would agree that what's there now is probably not consistent with how the community has changed down there. So, and I think about the last thing we need is to have another high-rise condominium on the project. I too am not willing to support another 40-year where we're locked up. I don't want to do that. And I would like to explore. You mentioned the my management agreement approach. I would like to learn more about how that might be able to work. Where we'd have a shorter period of time. So you mentioned Boucher. I don't know if there are others, but it sounds like what you'd like to do is have administration move forward and work now to see what the possibilities are, right? And I don't want to delay this either because, Kathy, we may have more information, but the problem is we lose 90 days. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get things going, right? I see what's coming in 3 years, and that's when we would start the process, right? And then from that, it's three more years. So, you know, you look at 6 years before anything happens. You know, the South of Fifth neighborhood has changed dramatically over the past couple decades, and it's continuing to evolve. I think this property needs to evolve with it, meet the needs of the local residents, and something that, you know, just uplifts the Miami Beach brand and the surrounding neighborhood. But if, you know, if one of us doesn't get the ball rolling, nothing will happen. This is not unlike the Barclay, you know, where it would have sat dormant if one of us didn't say, hey, what are we doing with that thing? It's been sitting around for since 2014. Right. And now all of a sudden it's a hot topic. But, yes. You know, we have assets that sometimes are underutilized. And, right. And this, I think, my personal opinion, is one of those assets now that we need to relook at.
So I absolutely do not want to sell this land, but would there be any objection to us getting an appraisal? Because I would like to see what it's worth, not for purposes of sale, but
you can imagine what it's worth
of what it may be worth in terms of as part of a management situation.
Mr. Chair, since we bring that up, ideally, again, because this is in a residential neighborhood, and one of the things that I'm very frustrated, for example, just stepping back for a moment to learn from our mistakes, is how tied our hands are, like with the marina. And want to make sure that whatever arrangement, contractual arrangement, we move forward in the future with this facility is one where the city is more in the driver's seat. And we're not as tied with our hands. So I just want to make sure that I put that on the record, that whatever the arrangement is, whether it's a lease or a management or whatever it is, it's one where the city really has more of a driver's seat role in it.
Okay, so I want to keep this item here. We're not, I don't think that we're in a position where we're directing the administration to go negotiate a contract with anybody, but I think we would like the administration to explore options and bring those back to this committee so we can make a recommendation. So it's been mentioned a management agreement approach. We can always go with an RFP down the road, but that's why we're starting now, because we want to explore other options. So Boucher has been mentioned. There may be others. The parties that are currently operating may want to give us their vision of what they might want to do. I think what you're hearing, at least from the three here, is that we're not interested in hearing a vision for another 40-year contract, but we would be interested in a more of a management agreement situation where we have more flexibility. Am I stating that correctly?
From my perspective, that management agreement approach, and again, it's a good thing about starting this process now, is that we get to go to the community and see if the community feels good with us as the governing body of the city, having a little bit more of a role in the city administration. And Mr. Attorney, correct me if I'm just correct us if we're wrong in this. the management agreement approach would be that proper avenue as opposed to a lease, let's say.
Either approach, what you're talking about here is a future arrangement after the expiration of the existing lease, provided, of course, the tenant complies with all of its obligations. So with that, you know, concept in mind, it's within your prerogative to look at how you want, whether you want to have use the property for any purpose or have it managed or operated by a third party or do another lease. So it's all within your discretion.
And also, I think what would be helpful is if we could have staff do some community outreach with maybe SOFNA so that we could start getting some community input on what they think. And Mr. Gonzalez, I know you're here and you represent, I believe you represent the current operator. If you wish to speak, I'm happy to give you. Okay, great. So I think, go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just if we could, since they're going to be incurring costs, et cetera, if we could possibly just get a motion from this committee to move forward with doing an appraisal, doing the community outreach.
So I think
that
the motion's been made.
Motion, okay.
Commissioner Arreola, and it's
Perfect.
Been seconded, and it's unanimous. We will, we want to get an appraisal. Let's again get two. And again, it's not for purposes of selling, but in terms of if that information would be helpful in terms of whatever we might or might not do in terms of a management agreement. And then what we want, you're going to do the facilities assessment, so we're moving forward on that as part of the motion. And then the other thing is we want the administration to meet with, we're not authorizing any negotiation of any contract. We want the administration to meet with current operators such as Boucher if they're interested in speaking with us or other operators, including the current operator if they have a vision. And what we want is a vision plan. We want a storyboard of what they might think. And at the same time, we want SOFNA to begin to give us some input. And then, so let's bring this back. You're not going to have anything for, you said, 90 days on the assessment, right?
Very likely, 90 okay. days or so. Question through the chair, if I may.
Please.
Couple things that we're looking into is this area, this property sits on this area, used to be known as Pier Park. Although it no longer appears on our inventory, we have to confirm that we're not in conflict with any county requirements for properties that abut a park. That work and that due diligence is being done as we speak. I did have a conversation with Rafael on it, so that's something that through this process we will. Another item is when we bring back a request or a management agreement, obviously that would be a waiver of bid. Question for you, Mr. Chair, if there's any opportunity for us to take that back to commission at this time, or do you want to wait for us to have this vision plan?
No, I want to wait. I'll tell you why. Because I want this body to have the potential to make a recommendation. And so what I think we want to see is what's out there in the universe, right? So we've got a lot of work to do before we can get there. If it turns out that it's a recommendation that we move in one direction, then it would be a bid waiver and may require five votes. But
we're not there
yet. So I think
we need to hear from the community.
And what I want to do, Kathy, is I want to put this back on the agenda for March 31st. Not that you're going to be ready with all of this, but you may be able to give us a 5 minutes so that this body will know that we are moving forward and we're on track.
We could certainly, and within that time frame, we could certainly start meeting with the community. We could start meeting with Penrod, who is obviously sitting behind me, and others around the area that could potentially manage
meet
and
operate. Meet with them and see what their vision is. Meet with other operators, see what their vision is. And at some point, you're going to be ready to come back and say, these are the possibilities. I think what you're hearing, at least from three of us, we don't represent all seven of the voting members, but from the three of us, is that we're not going to support another 40-year contract to continue what is there now.
Understood.
Okay. Are you, Mr. Gonzalez, would you like to, certainly, go ahead, you're recognized.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, sorry, good afternoon. Alfredo Gonzalez on behalf of the Penrod brothers, and Mrs. Penrod's here with me today, plus her team pretty much sitting in the front row. I just wanted to be clear that Penrod has enjoyed their relationship with the city of Miami Beach for almost the last 40 years when the city sought them out to try to address South Fist. For all of us who have been around, Commissioner Arreola,
The 80s, that was the worst part of the beach. I mean, I remember the police department was down there, and the officers didn't want to go to their station at night. So a lot has come from there, and they're very excited to continue to be part of the future of South of Fifth and continue to evolve and realize that as they're getting to the end of their contract, they want to have that engagement with the community, with the commission, and definitely hopefully be part of the future of that space and South of Fifth. So I know you've been meeting with others and lobbied by others. I was just engaged, that's 48 hours ago. We'll be meeting with all of you and starting to share the vision. But we've been focusing, just so you know, Penrod's celebrating their, it's under Penrod Brothers, but you keep hearing the name Nikki Beach. In 1998, it was rebranded as Nikki Beach in honor of his daughter who passed away in a tragic accident while she was in high school. So they're celebrating the 25-year anniversary of Nikki Beach this year, not just in Miami, but across the world. They have over 12 locations in most lucrative beaches and in the world, Saint-Tropez, St. Bart, Marbella. But anyway, to keep it short, we'll work with the city, we'll work with the administration, we're going to sit down and meet with all of you and start having that conversation of what fits. And we realize that this is what was good in the 80s, what's gone. Now there's another phase. And thank God that, you know, South of Fifth has become from the least attractive part of Miami Beach to the most attractive. So we look forward to working with all of you.
Okay. Thank you so much. I apologize that we kept you all waiting. Big schedule today.
Yes. No, and it was important to them. That's why they wanted to be here.
Perfect. Thanks so much. Go ahead.
One thing you mentioned, Alfredo, that the South Fifth has changed so much, you know, and back in the 80s when it was really in bad condition, I was old enough to be going on there. You know, it just shows you what a CRA can do.
That's right.
And so, you know, remember the folks that opposed the CRA in North Beach. In 40 years, they can thank us. And the other thing is, you know, what live entertainment and a really well-run establishment like the Penrod Brothers have done for so long did for that neighborhood for so long, right? So, again, there's people that are opposed to this kind of use. Just wanted to highlight it. But, thank you for everything you've done for our city for the decades. But I do think it's time for a new, exciting look, whatever that might be. I have no preference. I have ideas, but let's see where this takes us.
Thank you. And just one more note.
Go ahead.
The good thing, their revenue numbers to the city have come back higher than pre-pandemic levels. So they've been able to bounce back after the pandemic, and it's higher this year than it has been prior.
You know, that's another thing I'd like to add. When you come back March 31st, let's get a summary of the revenue stream that the city has enjoyed based on the current model, because I'd like to look at that. Let's review that, and I'd like to see. That'll also help me when I see what the value of the property is, what my return on my investment is for the property, whatever it may be worth. So if you'll add that to the list. With that, I'm going to close the item, and then we'll see you back March 31st. Thank you. And thank you, and I apologize again for keeping you waiting. So thank you. Let's call item 24. Gosh, Jose, I thought I was getting you back to work, and I keep you here. I apologize. This is your item, Commissioner Fernandez. Passes. What is your dream?
Okay, so just this should be pretty simple, I hope. You know, we have several boards and committees. We have approximately 40 boards and committees. Sometimes we add more every time we have a meeting. But
if you'd like to take the lead on reducing the number of committees, I would welcome that.
Well, citizen involvement is important, but we do have these boards and committees. The issue is that because of the way we've developed our city, a lot of our residents actually don't use a car. One of the ways we say thank you to our residents for their participation and their service in these boards is that we do give them a parking pass. However, you know, we do want to encourage individuals, if they don't have to have a car, not to have a car, to take public transportation if they have that ability, or to use bicycles if they can, and which creates a situation that if this is an individual who doesn't use a car or bicycle, we're not saying thank you. We're not giving them any for a lack of a better word, benefit or way even to get to their service. So for those individuals who attest to not have a car and that they're not going to use a parking permit, I would like us to explore either giving them a bus pass or giving them maybe a city bike membership, one or the other, as a way to be able to get to City Hall for their meetings or to whichever facility it is that they have meetings at. Or we have certain land use boards, for example, if you're a member of the planning board, if you're a member of the historic preservation board, you go sometimes to do site visits and that type of stuff. So I'd like just for us to explore if there's an alternate we could give.
Jose, what is the is it possible to have a bus pass? Is that what's the fair market value of that? Do we know?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've put together a memo for this discussion where we listed the prices of the passes that are offered through Miami-Dade County. The program is called the Transit Corporate Discount Program, and the city participates in that program for its employees. We currently have 50-plus employees registered. What the program does is the city fully subsidizes the cost of a monthly pass, easy card it's called, for employees who wish to avail themselves of the program. The cost depends on the number of participants. So, and we've listed those for you. A one-month corporate discount pass, for example, which covers Metro Bus and Metro Rail, if there are between 4 and 99 participating employees, the cost per pass is $101.25.
Do we have anybody participating in this right now? Do we have some employees participating?
We do.
We do. And so yes. Which category are we in? Are we in the 4 to 99?
4 through 99.
We're in the 4 to 99. Yeah. So $101. But that's a countywide as opposed to, like, the parking permit is just for Miami Beach, right?
Correct.
So I've heard an estimate that the parking permit has an estimated fair market value of $60 a month. Is that have you guys heard that number before?
I'm not aware of that number.
In the past, I remember having seen some sort of audit in the past with a similar number to that. This is over 10 years ago.
So the question is, this bus pass would be countywide as opposed to the parking permit is Miami Beach. So, Commissioner Fernandez, what if... Like, that's would be an additional benefit. So, but what if we gave somebody a credit of $60 and they would pay the difference if they wanted? Because I don't think there's not a bus pass that's just for Miami Beach, is there? You can't buy just a bus pass for Miami Beach.
That's correct.
I'm fine doing the credit. I think that's fair if we can identify. Okay, what is the fair value of this decal? And then give that individual who attests to not, you know, wanting to have the parking pass.
Well, we wouldn't give them the parking
we
pass.
We wouldn't give them, yeah, in lieu of the parking pass. Yeah, absolutely. I'm good with that. The alternative would be, in my opinion, a city bike membership.
Which would be less than the 60, so...
Than the 60. Because, again, the idea is that you're using this in the performance of your functions. So either or, either the stipend as you mentioned or a city bike membership.
So do you want to keep it here or do you want to move it back to the commission?
Let's send it to commission.
Let's send it back to the commission. Yeah. Then you made a motion, I'll second it. To let's confirm, Jose, if we can, the estimated fair market value of the permit. I've heard it's $60. In which case, if you come back and say it's 50 or if you come back and say it's 70, then let's make a recommendation to the commission that in lieu of, you cannot have both, in lieu of a parking permit, you can have a credit against a county bus, but or you could have, I like the idea of the city bike, the monthly I think is maybe
like
$25. So is this my parking... guru, are you going to tell me that the 60 is a good number, or you're? Huh?
Bad number.
Bad number.
Bad number. Okay.
Garage access about $125 a month.
This is not garage access. This is a parking permit for on-street parking. It's not. You don't get access to the garage.
You get access to this garage only.
This one. Okay.
We don't have a citywide permit that costs.
No, but board members, I love it. You did this the other day. We had you run over here. So, you can thank us for the exercise program, okay? No charge for the workout.
All right, let's strategically wait till Monica
I know,
back
I'm
to her office
wait
and bring call her back.
Item. We have one more question, Monica. You do have the parking permit for board members. You get a parking permit where you can park on the street anywhere in the city.
Correct. And City Hall.
And City Hall. So years ago I was told the fair market value is about $60 a month. Because it's not access to garages except this one.
Excuse me, through the chair. Mm-hmm. What do we charge for our monthly?
In the lots, about $75.
In the lots? $75?
In our parking lots.
In the surface parking lot.
In the surface parking lot.
I'm comfortable with that number. Yes. $75. Let's do offer a credit, and let's.
I'm good with that.
Are you good? Yeah.
I'm fine.
So that
with
means
that.
The person would only have to pay like $25.
What I don't like is that right now we have a discrepancy. If we do,
there's seniors that don't have cars and other people that don't have cars. So let's do that. With that, I got to close this. I got to get a couple other items done.
Oh, Mr. Chair, to that point, you do have a caller in the event you're inclined to take public comment.
I don't have time I'm sorry, but I got three more items and I got 15 minutes. So there will be perhaps public comment at the commission meeting when the item's heard, okay? Okay, let's close this out. Kathy, you got what you need, right? Okay. All right, so Commissioner Arreola, you've got item number 6. I've got 13 minutes left. Who's here for item 6, an update on Economic Development Department? Hello.
Yeah. If we can make this quick, this is an important item for all of us, but I want to at least tee up item 17 before we close.
Okay, so let's go to 17. Perfect. Discuss protections for tenants, that's your item as well, Commissioner Arreola, so go ahead.
Yeah, I'll tee this up. We're not going to conclude it today, but I want to get it out there. And I got a strong feeling all of us are going to, want to do something here, but I got a feeling Commissioner Fernandez in particular is interested in this. So, there's a lot of things that we have on the books and, as part of our administration for services for residents here in the city, as well as at the county level, and even there's some protections at the state and federal level. But, I was made aware of a personal situation with somebody close to me who, is lower income and, challenged economically. They live in an apartment here in Miami Beach. Not the best housing, but what they can afford. And the building's in bad shape. They had their ceiling collapse due to water intrusion and whatever else. And then, she has three small kids, very little economic means, and, whatever political power she has, she knows me. That's it. The landlord won't repair it, and she's afraid that if she complains, she'll be her lease won't be renewed, or she'll be somehow, pushed out and living in a bad situation with three small kids. And, what do we do to require the landlord to fix it and make it habitable? On top of that, to add insult to injury, because of the housing market, the landlord has raised her rent like $600, which is like a over 30% increase, And this is going on throughout the city. And, I think we do a good job of servicing our residents with economic means, but I don't think we're doing enough to help those who need the most help. So what I wanted to talk about with you colleagues is, what more can we do in city services whether it's having legal services that we either contribute to or our own in-house lawyer dedicated to servicing residents who have disputes with their landlords, because landlords tend to have more economic power than tenants. What can we do to beef up our code? What can we do to help people that are getting displaced in these kinds of situations? We had that situation, was it on the 7th Street block in Euclid. People get displaced. And when you've got out-of-town landlords or landlords that don't care, you have families that are being impacted. And it's bad enough losing your air conditioning for one night. Some people are living in housing that is third world, and we can't get landlords to fix their property. And if they complain, they're afraid of being evicted. So I wanted to tee this up for a conversation. We're not going to bring this in for a landing today, but I want to get the ball rolling. It's in finance because to the extent that we want to create some additional city services, I would be interested in entertaining that, whether it's beefing up our legal department, code, what have you. So there you have it.
Thank you. Let's hear from staff and go ahead. How are you going to solve this?
Well, we already did.
Okay.
A little bit of it.
Okay.
Alba Tarre, Office of Housing and Community Services. Through our home ARP funds, we actually funded Legal Services of Greater Miami, and they will be housed in our office once a week to help tenants and residents, as well as we'll be able to provide direct referrals to their offices. But it's very important for residents to have accessibility, so we worked contractually with them to bring them into our office at least once, hopefully twice a week.
Okay, great. So a couple things there. Thank you. Do they speak Spanish?
Yes, they will be speaking English and Spanish. And worst case scenario, we use translator services if we have any other languages that present to our office.
Who will they report to besides, legal services, but do they liaison with our city attorney or with you?
Well, they would be working directly with us because they would have a contract agreement with us through our home ARP funds.
Yeah, so a couple things. One is, how do we get the word out to the community that we have this and days of the week, hours of operation? But one. The second one is, how do we hold them accountable? We just gave them a lot of money. Government and nonprofits tend to just take money. How do we make sure that providing the services that we're contracting for, whether that's your office or the city attorney, to hold their feet to the fire? Like if people are coming in with issues, make sure they're getting resolved.
Absolutely. And we have benchmarks in our contract as well, as that's why it was important for us not only to be sending referrals, which we have the power to do so, to their offices, but bringing them here to where we are housed. My office is right in front of where they're going to be able to make sure that they're reaching out to our tenants. We will be handling the appointments ourselves through our office, so they will have the schedule being provided by us to them. And so that's a little bit of the controls that we put in place. In addition, we're also working with Miami-Dade County's Tenant Advocacy Department that was just created to build that synergy and collaboration whenever there's other issues that need to be taken care of.
Colleagues, I don't know if you think it's a good idea. Maybe we have that person come in and introduce themselves to us so we can ask them questions. But, one thing that I'd like to ask them is, what do they need from us in terms of resources or, beefing up our code so that we can do what I was talking about, which is holding property owners accountable for making sure their buildings are safe and that they do it quickly.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I want to thank the two of you and the entire City Commission because, we do things together. We, last year, we approved a directive to the administration asking them to create this tenant legal services in our city. And then subsequently, I think it was in November, we all approved the funding that came to commission for that. And Alba worked very hard in negotiating this agreement. And so I'm very grateful for getting that directive we brought on the agenda and pushing it through. I agree with you. And actually, I would like to see metrics. Every once, maybe quarterly, it would be great to get metrics to see the success of the program, the amount of cases they brought in, the outcome of those cases. And Commissioner Real, something you might be interested in, I've placed a request, you know, and started conversations with the city manager, the city attorney, of looking, like, if we could have some sort of body that addresses, like, tenant issues. For example, sometimes a tenant might not feel comfortable going directly to their landlord or on an issue, or maybe they have been going to their landlord on an issue and the tenant has been ignoring it. But sometimes it's something that maybe if they sent it to a tenant board, it could be mediated and mitigated without having to go through a whole legal process. Just it may be a communication issue, which is a lot of times what also happens in some landlord-tenant issues, is that there just needs to be a little bit of help in facilitating communication, either because of language barriers or distance or technical issues. And that's one of the things that I've asked our city manager and the city attorney to look at, is seeing, is it feasible to have a tenant advisory board or something like that in the city. But great minds think alike. I brought that item last year to create this legal program, and you all supported it. It's not mine. It's all of us. It's a city. And so I'm just happy that you brought this, and we're having this conversation, because I don't like talking about it at a commission, but thank you, Alba, for doing that. This is going to help so many low-income residents.
So maybe
residents.
We can have the person come on February 17th, our next meeting, and introduce himself, and then let us know, you know, what else we can do. And I do think we need some metrics, at least the first year, so on a quarterly basis. So why don't you track how many people we're serving, some outcomes and so forth, and we'll hear that quarterly, okay? And then go ahead.
And just for the record, because, you know, on social media people write stuff, and someone have written, this only helps people once they're being evicted. But this actually, not only before they even enter the eviction phase, it also helps a tenant with many repair issues.
Landlord-tenant issues. This is a very broad scope, and we made sure that it was a very broad scope.
The 60-day notice.
Including the 60-day notice as well. And we have been sending referrals to them currently. They will be starting in our office on hopefully Thursday. So it's our first meeting.
Okay, great.
Through the chair.
I'm sorry. Yeah, please.
Do you? I was just wondering if, because Alba also mentioned the county's tenant advocacy services, if you wanted to have them come in and do a presentation, then also on what they do.
Yeah, we can do.
They're actually on the line right now, or we can set something for the next.
I don't have time today, yeah. So we're running out of time. So let's do that on the 17th.
Of course.
Okay. And then with, you said they're starting this Thursday?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Exactly.
So let's come back with, in addition to February 17th, in May or June at the latest, that it would be your first quarterly report to the committee with some metrics, okay?
Absolutely.
And with that, gentlemen, I'd like to defer item 6 because we're not going to have enough time, Commissioner Arriola, and also Commissioner Fernandez, your item 16, can I move that to February 17th?
That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
All right, so show item 16 deferred until February 17th, and also item 6, and I promise you I will put early times on those so we absolutely will hear those. And I think with that we've concluded the agenda, and we'll – Kathy, did
but
you
the
have...
the other one was... I'm sorry.
What
it,
item?
It was item 6 and item 16.
Yeah, item 6 and 16
okay.
will be deferred until February 17th. We've run out of time. And we'll hear those items early so they don't get deferred again. And with... Is that okay, Commissioner Earl? Okay. So with that, we'll stand
adjourned.
Thank you very much.
I sent you a text, but I guess you get...
Perfect.